Hello, everybody. Hey, welcome back to Joel Radio, live from Ferndale, Michigan. It's the Corey Goes Through Joel Shit Radio Show.
Yeah.
How you doing, everybody? Welcome to the show. Good times coming your way.
I'm a little down, Joel.
No, what's to be down about?
I got the summertime mumps. I got the blues.
Corey's got the summertime blues. But we got a great show for you. Thanks for joining us. We got a good show for you. It's going to be fun. Come on.
There's no wango in my tango.
There's a hitch in your giddy up. Welcome to the show, everybody.
46 after the hour. 83 degrees here in the Motor City.
I had Heather do that on the Funhouse last night on W Fuck Off Radio.
Did you ever do time and temperature?
No, I had her do, like, you know, I had her talk up, you know. She did her classic rock radio intro. You know.
I think that's a new feature.
Still to come, REO Speedwagon.
I think we're going to do traffic and weather on the 8th.
That'll be what good. On a podcast. That'll be fantastic.
Traffic and weather on the 8th coming up. Joel Radio.
You know what we could do? You know what would be great is we could do, like, we could take the 10 day and say, if you're listening to this on Monday, there's a 30% chance of showers. If you're listening to this on Tuesday,
if you're listening to this in Dusseldorf, Germany.
Well, exactly.
It will be.
We could do that for everybody.
Tomorrow's high temperature will be 22 Celsius. In the greater Frankfurt Mainz region.
For those of you in
in lovely Wiesbaden.
Yeah, it'll be a fun wrinkle to add.
In Reykjavik, Iceland today, the temperature will be cold as balls.
Hey, listen, we've got listeners in Iceland, we've got listeners everywhere. So let's
used to, now we don't know.
Well, I'm sure we do.
For God's sakes!
Corey's going to give out the...
652-0746. Call and leave a message.
It's the douchebag hotline.
Yeah.
It's great. And we got to talk about Ryan Dunn's death. We haven't talked about
boy,
that
today. It's a lot of, it's a funerals, farewells, and photographs and memories. Pages in my mind. Oh, sorry.
Well, you know what the best part is? That I love that, you know, he sped off into the trees. While Knoxville, Bam, and Steve-O were laughing hysterically. So,
hey.
Really, it's very...
Hey, now!
There's your first laugh of the show.
Come on,
everybody.
Ebert got in trouble for that.
Ebert got in trouble, but Ebert...
What did Ebert say that was wrong?
He didn't really say anything wrong, but the timing of it is, you know, I mean...
Sure.
It's so easy to say, well, it's Jackass, and he was...
Just because Ebert's got that big, fat black wife to drive him around. Now he's he's got a chauffeur... Ebert's as close to being a brain in a jar as any human being's ever been.
He has that skin.
Got
with the
no
thing.
Jaw.
Oh, it's weird.
Can you imagine his dick working at this point?
No, I can't imagine the dick works at all.
Why would you? God.
Yeah, he's
that woman must need a meal ticket because
I'm sure Ebert's got some money socked away.
Yeah, he's
got
to have some cash stowed away at this point, right?
Yeah.
After all those books and stuff, you'd think he'd be some money.
Well, the thing with the Jackass is that it's so easy to make, you know, because you just go, oh, you hear about it and you just go, what, is he drunk? Driving fast, probably, this idiot? And then, of course, all of that is true. You know, I mean, even one
thing. It's not, when you're like, star of Jackass dies.
Yeah.
The only question is, did an M80 blow up in his anus? You know, like, that's how did he, you know?
Right, it's like, you know.
I kind of expected to hear, like, Ryan Dunn fell off a rocket sled.
Yeah, well, you know, but I mean, what he did was not dissimilar to that. I mean, he's the guy driving fast.
But he was not killed by one of the Jackass stunts.
He wasn't, but.
Just by the lifestyle.
Yeah, but.
But, you know, by the overall,
right.
I think the overall attitude of those guys.
Well, it's like my favorite story ever was when Desmond Llewellyn died.
Oh,
it was Q from James Bond, and he was 87, and people were like, oh, he's so sad, and the guy, like, drove his he drove his, like, convertible off the road into a tree. Like, you know what I mean? It's like,
you
kinda, expect people to die.
I almost think that's the best kind of death.
Yeah?
Like, the way Macho Man went out.
Yeah? But he died young, though. That's the thing.
Macho's heart exploded, and
right.
He drove off and hit a wall.
Right.
that's kind of the way to go, sure. isn't it? I mean,
but if you're Ryan Dunn, the ironic death, like his death is exactly what you'd expect.
I'm thinking I don't really want to know that death is coming for me.
Sure,
I'm
okay.
not. You know that.
Right.
I really just it being a surprise. Hey,
the ironic Ryan Dunn death is like if he got cancer or something. You know,
sure.
Like he defied death
and
on
hopefully
Jackass,
hopefully
and
you,
now
you get a surprise death that's so quick.
Yeah.
That there's not the, oh, fuck, what did I do now to kill myself?
You know? I'm sure, listen, I guarantee you he was having a great time.
Right.
1 second before that car went off the road.
Sure.
He was loving life. So
partying
in that respect,
hearty.
You know, he didn't hurt any. I guess he killed his passenger.
Yeah.
Who I guess was an Iraq war veteran.
Oh, good.
So he survived okay. Iraq.
Well, didn't he, like.
But couldn't hang out with the jackass.
He tweeted, like, pictures of them doing margarita
yeah.
shooters and stuff.
And,
you know,
and TMZ confirmed, I don't know if you've seen this because it just happened, but. Twice the legal limit
no.
in his well, bloodstream. So, yeah.
Not a shocker.
Not a shocker. But, you know, I enjoyed the Jackass movies, and I Ryan Dunn was, you know, he was certainly not the least of the Jackass guys,
no.
yet not the, you know, he was a mid-level Jackass guy.
A mid-level.
He was a mid-level,
well,
right?
As long as
let's rank the Jackass guys.
As long
rank
as Party
them.
Boy is still okay.
Well, I think Pontius was just above him. I think him and Pontius okay. were in the.
Well, Ryan Dunn was clearly above, what's the fat guy?
Preston Lacey.
He was clearly above Preston.
Preston Lacey and Wee Man.
I haven't watched that show or that those movies.
You
in
didn't
a
see
long
Jackass 3D?
I didn't actually see Jackass 3D.
Jackass 3D was good.
No.
No, I would think you go with Knoxville at the top.
Yeah.
Followed by Steve-O, who's number two.
Sure.
Bam Margera's number three. Then I think you're debating between Pontius and Ryan Dunn mm-hmm. at four, although the debate is over now.
Yeah.
So I think you've got those guys.
Wah, wah.
And then you've got, isn't it Dave England would be at the very bottom of the Jackass?
Okay. And on the pyramid?
Yeah, like the guy you don't know. And they even did a thing with him once where they said, can you just step out of your trailer? Nobody knows who you are. And he, like all these fans.
There's usually
there.
Like one or two other guys that just sort of float around that you're not really
well,
sure.
Well, there were they guys are. That were on the show that didn't make it into the movies.
Right, right.
And those were like
they were more skateboarder guys.
Brendan DiCamillo was one of those guys.
God, are you a Jackass?
I know.
Nerd?
I well, I've seen every Jackass. I use my Netflix to get like every like Steve-O video and stuff and all that like stuff that he did independently.
Really?
Jackass. I've seen all that stuff.
Wow.
And all the Bam stuff that he did with CKY. I've seen all that shit.
Wow.
Yeah, I liked all that. I was into that for a while.
Steve-O has been making the talk show rounds, pushing a book.
Oh.
And he was talking about how there were two different camps of jet. Like, there was the Bam camp and
yeah,
the
Knoxville camp.
And the Knoxville
sure.
camp, and they sort of formed one.
They did.
So I don't know who was in the Knoxville camp and who was in the...
It was Knoxville and Pontius were buddies.
Okay.
And then I think Knoxville got... And then it was really Bam and Dunn.
Yeah.
And then he had, like, Rake Yohn and Brandon DiCamillo and Rab himself.
Yes.
Yeah, I know all the sort
you are,
of the side. Yeah, I'm
a Jackass nerd.
I'm a Jackass nerd. And
when it comes to alternative culture for men aged 18 to 34, be it Juggalo Championship Wrestling
yes.
or Jackass or UFC, Joel knows it all, everybody.
I know all. Thank you very much.
Knows it intimately.
I know all about the history of ESPN
Joel,
now, too.
It's like Joel, it's amazing that Joel's actually got a girlfriend. It's you'd think... You'd think he'd never gotten laid with his...
I might have been single while I was watching all that Jackass
with his media
stuff.
Obsessions. No, because girls, like, you want to name... Here's three things girls aren't big fans of.
Yeah.
Okay, aside from Juggalettes, who are a different quality of animal.
What's that?
There's the three things girls are not into. ICP, UFC, and Jackass.
Well, actually, my girlfriend, and I've heard some... They thought, like, some of those guys are hot.
They think they're cute.
They think, like, know. Knoxville. And I think my girlfriend, she saw Ryan Dunn recently on Minute to Win It.
Oh,
he was him and Steve-O were on there,
really?
And she thought he was cute on there.
Well, Steve-O so, was making the rounds, pushing his book, and he's all like, "I say, you know, I found God, and I'm all clean now."
Yeah, well,
he pulled a Ted DiBiase, and nobody, nobody wants that.
He was on crystal meth and stuff for a while.
Right,
that'll make you.
I think he just calmed down for him.
Sure,
I don't think he calmed down by normal person standards.
Yeah.
But he was shooting heroin into his eyeball, so I think maybe it is.
Yeah, I mean, being a crazy Jesus freak
yeah.
is almost the next step from, like, drug addict. It's not that dissimilar.
Sure.
There is still a,
no,
a mental...
you're out of your mind.
There
on
is a mental
else.
Weakness,
yeah.
Yeah. You're not, like, you're not sober and sane when you're a Jesus freak.
No.
No one would consider you to be a rational human being.
Absolutely not.
Yeah.
But, anyway.
So Ryan Dunn is gone.
Steve-O said he was working as a clown on a cruise ship.
Yeah, that's in... Yeah, I have the History of Steve-O DVD. I've seen that. He talks about his whole career.
He was an August clown.
Yeah, he was good. He was on a... I saw that. He was on... He would on a... Like, people would be registering for the cruise. Like, they'd be getting on. And Steve-O would be, like, in the lobby of the cruise ship, juggling and shit.
Yeah.
And on his skate... But he was like a clown on a skateboard. That was his... He could do a handstand on his skateboard.
Well, apparently the other clowns didn't like him.
No, the other clowns hated him.
Yeah. Well, I'm shocked that it was Ryan Dunn, not him. Because, I mean, if anybody was going to die from typhus or some kind of terrible infection in his scrotum, you'd think it was that guy.
Well, any of those guys could have died. Well, Johnny was almost killed on the one Jackass.
Yeah.
When he got on top of the rocket and the side of the rocket exploded.
Right, sure.
And they said if it would have exploded where he was sitting, it would have killed him.
Right.
So he had that scare and
Well, funny man, goodbye.
Good night, Ryan Dunn.
So long.
He died like he lived. A jackass.
And then Ebert, the people going to yell at Ebert. The guy crashed his car doing 130 miles an hour. There was recently a police chase in Detroit where a kid on a motorcycle was doing like 130 on a motorcycle and the cop crashed. He smashed into the cop car.
Oh, yeah.
And people are like, why were you chasing him? And I'm like, well, he was doing 130. It was 3 in the morning.
Right, you go at some point, you
got
to go.
He was like, go Power Rangers on that bike. And it's like, you know, I'm a little sad for the guy, but.
Yeah, when you're going 130 on a bike, it's like, you know. You know what killed you? The laws of physics.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah. You know, I mean, you weren't killed.
It's not Tron Light Cycle, asshole.
By the way, I saw the Tron Legacy 3D Blu-ray.
Oh, well, son of a
bitch. On my new 3D television.
Joel's just in love with his 3D TV.
I don't even barely talked about it on this show, but we did some 3D
gaming.
There's
a gleam that comes in Joel's eye when he talks about the 3D.
We did some 3D gaming last time after the show. It was fun, right?
Anything pop out at you?
No, the problem with Tron Legacy in 3D, and I don't know, did you see it theatrically in 3D?
Yes.
Like, everything was black.
Right.
So there was no, like, people. My girlfriend was very upset. She was like, well, that doesn't seem like it's 3D. And I go, that's because there's no, like, foreground, middle ground, background.
This is happening all the time.
It's just kind of an empty thing.
Okay, Green Lantern is in space.
Yeah. And how did that look in 3D?
Not that hot, right? You can't do black.
I didn't see it. Yeah,
the all-time worst 3D movie, or at least since the 50s. I mean, I'm sure there was some shit back then that was the early 80s when they did 3D. But the worst of the current crop of 3D movies was clearly Last Airbender, because a lot of that was set at night or in the snow,
right?
So it didn't make a lot of...
But that was also a conversion and stuff.
Yeah,
and
but it just...
The
movie itself worked against the process.
I'll demonstrate for you. Probably not good to do it now on the show, but I've actually taken some 3D photographs.
Oh,
wherein you take two photos with your regular digital camera.
Sure.
And use software to combine them.
Uh-huh.
And me and my girlfriend spent an afternoon taking 3D photographs together. And... we realize that you do need to have that foreground, mid-ground, background.
Mm-hmm.
And if you have all that, it looks really cool. And if you don't...
You also have to be really still.
Well, there's rules. Do you want to tell... I can tell everybody how to take a 3D photograph.
It's hard to take a 3D photograph of a living thing because they move.
Right, because they move. So you can't really take water. You can't take animals that are moving around. If you take it of a person and they're still, you can do it. But what you do is that you take the... In this case... I'm using a Canon A95 digital camera.
Oh, good. Okay.
And what? Of course. What else would you use?
That thing's giant.
Well, this is an old digital camera. But anyway,
it's got a hand crank on it.
It does not. I think the batteries are.
Joel's got that. He's got that little hood he throws over his head when he takes a picture.
big puff of smoke comes from the flash.
And fucking. You know,
this thing's about 6 years old.
I know, and it's like a brick.
It looks like a brick. This is a quality camera. It says the fold-out rotating LCD, which normally you don't even get now.
I know, I'm just saying, like,
tiny.
I had a camcorder from 10 years ago. If I pulled that thing out,
it would look gigantic.
You would go, what is that piece of shit?
So anyway, here's what you do. This is what I do anyway, and you could do it. You take the camera and you put it up to one eye.
Uh-huh.
You snap the photograph. With one eye closed, one eye open, you take it. And then you just move the camera enough, then you open the
other eye.
There's
no better
Move it to the other eye.
There's no better radio than talking about photography.
I'm describing it. So people at home can do this at home. And then you just aim at the same thing, and then you use software to combine the two images. Mm-hmm. And I use a program called, what is this program called? Ta-da-ta-da. I don't know what this is called. Let me open it up. Stereo Photo Maker. It's free. It's by Masuji Suto and David Sykes, and I don't know where you get this, but Stereo Photo Maker version 4.32, and you open it up, and it'll make a combine the photos, and then I display them on my Panasonic 3D plasma.
There you go.
And you put on your glasses, and they look cool as fuck. I'll show them to you after. So, but I realize that you need all those elements to do it. So I figure now I'm more than qualified to shoot.
Sure.
Whatever Hollywood 3D movie.
I might be ready for 3D porn. If I'm gonna,
you know what? They haven't done that yet.
If I'm going to waste my time with 3D.
Yeah.
We're jumping the gun here a little bit, but let me get into this 3D. Well, now that we're in the 3D discussion.
All right,
the endless 3D discussion. I have to have a conversation about 3D probably once a week with somebody.
Are these people in the business? Or
people know what my job is.
Oh, okay.
Like the girl who was cutting my hair the other day, I ended up talking about my job inadvertently, and she was like, What a cool job. How do you get it? I'm like, It's not a cool job when you got to go see a Jennifer Aniston movie in the middle of February or you got to watch Martin Lawrence in a fat suit. So I got to talk about 3D to somebody at some point.
Sure.
Almost every week.
Uh-huh.
And here's my problem, and there's some indications that the 3D bubble is bursting.
I understand that, sure.
And that the theater chains aren't as happy with it as they were originally.
I understand that as well.
But yet the studios seem insistent on putting in everything. Cars 2 is in 3D.
Yes.
And I went to a screening, which predictably was full of children.
Yes.
Okay? And they have child-sized 3D glasses.
Oh.
For the little ones.
Of course.
But there was the joint was jumping with 4- and 5-year-olds, right? Because it's G-rated.
Yeah.
It's a movie you think you can take your kids to.
Yeah.
But you get a kid to keep those 3D glasses
on.
Yeah,
it doesn't work.
I think if they're 7, they'll sit there and do it.
Sure.
But, like, the other littler kids were just fidgety.
The kids don't care enough about
The little girl next to me was, like, 4. And she, like, I had to get her, and I walked out. I was bored by the movie to tears, but I walked out and, like, got her another pair.
Yeah.
Because she kept dropping them. And I'm like, this is the
right,
thing. Yeah. Kids are not going to sit there with those.
Well, I was at the drive-in recently, and you think the kids, the movie comes on, the kids are on their Razor scooters running around the parking lot, and this Silverdome. It was terrible. But yeah, but 3D, I agree with you saying.
You know, it's probably good that most kids don't care about movies. They're doing something else with their lives.
Yeah.
I was the kid who cared about the movie.
Yeah.
And look what it led me to.
Yes. But the kids just, you know, they say they want to go to the movies, and then they get there and they want to just goof around. But it's hard, you know, 3D really does require you to be attentive and sort of you have to care about, you know, kids don't care what the movie looks like.
Right.
They'll watch something on VHS and just the same as they'll watch it in a 3D, a giant screen. It doesn't really matter to them so much.
No.
So in a way, you know, by targeting 3D to children.
Old people and children don't care about visual fidelity.
They don't. Not at all.
I can't explain to my father-in-law, basically, how to get an HDMI cable. He's got a plasma screen.
Yeah.
And he just doesn't have it.
Doesn't care.
HD. And it just makes me insane.
It does. You go over there and you go.
I'm like, Bob, what are you? He's mounted it on the wall. He's got a.
He does everything.
He's got stereo speakers.
Right.
He's got a nice setup.
Yeah.
But he's like, well, why would I spend extra money on cable?
Because you just spent thousands of dollars on the television. Well, some people, you know what the thing with
and the extra $10 a month for the HD box.
Yeah, and the HD they won't.
He can't do that.
Although I'll admit that is a ripoff.
You don't need to
that cable companies do that. Right. That they charge you extra for HD. I have ESPN 3D, and I'm paying $10 a month for that. Probably for maybe another month because I'm about done with it.
No point in that.
I watch the NBA Finals in 3D.
Well, there's no content on it.
Yeah, I watch the NBA Finals, and now it's all replays of old college football games.
Well, are they going to have NFL games?
Old
X-Games?
They haven't announced that. Yeah. You know, the problem is all that stuff is because the NFL doesn't have its contracts settled now. That's something that probably should be done and should be announced.
But probably won't.
But it won't be because they're, you know.
Hey, the NFL lockout. There's a topic.
Believe me, if you're not asleep yet from our 3D movie discussion, let us talk about the lockout and
I'm going to put two topics. This is going to have a topic showdown. Let's have a topic collision.
Sure.
More boring. NFL lockout or raising the debt ceiling?
Raising the debt ceiling.
Which, for purposes
of this show,
I'm just saying.
Raising the debt ceiling.
These are two things that I hear. You know, I watch a lot of, I watch a lot of cable news and I watch a lot of Sports Center, right?
Okay.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Usually during my day when I'm sitting there working, because I work from home a lot, I'll either have ESPN on or CNN or MSNBC or something, mm-hmm. and they'll be talking about raising the debt ceiling every time. And you just go, stop already. I don't fucking care. Robert Reich.
It's hard to understand it because it's sort of a theoretical thing. It's not a practical matter. I mean, it is.
And you know what? This is why you get bad media covers, though, because when they talk about something that's actually probably important,
yeah,
the media themselves, the reporters get bored, mm-hmm. and they want, oh, now hold on. What, Sarah Palin said what?
Yeah, that's the, right? what happens. Sure.
That's what happens. Is that, and then
all
just,
those insignificant things.
Donald Trump is doing something? Let me get on that.
Tracy Morgan.
Yeah, Tracy
people,
Morgan.
I mean, how stupid was that?
Breaking news. Yeah. Black man has homophobic comments.
I mean, like, what?
What?
Tracy Morgan's been crazy for a decade. And all of a sudden, you know, like.
I should have, if we were a more professionally prepared operation over here, I would have brought the audio from Gilbert Godfrey.
Oh, so you interviewed him recently.
You maybe, 610-552-0746.
What's
if
on
you
there?
Want to hear the Gilbert Gottfried interview,
I would like to hear
I will post it as a bonus on the mailing list.
On the mailing list bonus.
But you got to email or call or send a letter to your congressman,
okay.
or your ombudsman or your member of parliament.
All right.
Or your mukalakahaka, whatever the fuck.
Well,
you
he got in trouble for his Twitter comment, so he.
Yeah,
had,
so I had a great.
You talked to him about
it. I interviewed, and you can read the text.
I did read the text.
On MetroTimes.com. You can find that on the blogs in there. But yeah, Gilbert's always funny, and we just talked a lot about it. And there's a little bit more to the audio portion than into the paper. But we talked about that and Tracy Morgan and just the ridiculousness of.
He's, yeah.
Like, is that a shock to people?
But I think, isn't it true that one guy in the audience complained? That it wasn't like people got up and walked out? I don't even know the
like
full.
Like, the Michael Richards thing, like I think the whole room was
Yeah,
kind
I think
of
everyone
offended.
Was kind of offended by that. But the Tracy Morgan thing, it was like one guy. One guy tipped off the papers.
And that's what happens in comedy, though. Yeah. Is that if you work a room, 400 people laugh their ass mm-hmm. off, one old lady goes over and bitches, mm-hmm. and the club owner goes, well, we can't have that.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's the insanity uh-huh. of comedy. 400 mm-hmm. people, mm-hmm. 399 of them have a great time, shitting grins.
It happens from time. It doesn't happen often, but
doesn't,
it does
but
happen.
It's something that can happen to comedy. Or you get comment cards.
I've seen club owners completely ignore those and throw those in the garbage. And I've also seen people get fired over one person's complaint.
Right.
So.
Right.
Yeah.
And then you'll sit there and there'll be a room full of people laughing their ass off and then somebody mm-hmm. fills out a comic card.
Yeah.
And then you hear about it. Anyway, enough about comedy, which
well,
is a shitty business.
It's what happened with Tracy to a larger extent. Well,
but here's my point about Tracy Morgan. Okay. I did not think his comments were particularly enlightened.
No.
I did not think his comments were particularly funny.
All right.
I don't mind a gay joke, but his stuff about, you know, it's a choice. That stuff just kind of goes... No, it's, you know what I mean? That's he might as well have said, you
know
what
you're saying.
He might as well have said gravity doesn't work, you know?
Well, I get that, but at the same time, when you cash something in the form of comedy, and he is a comedian, he is a, you know, if there was a comedy license, he would have one, clearly.
Uh-huh.
You know what I mean? It's not like some guy at open mic acting like an asshole. It's right. it's a guy
No,
who,
it's a professional comic.
It's a professional entertainer. People paid money to see. I'll never say it's okay to you know... To shut those guys up or to fire them over their comments.
Oh, absolutely not. No.
You know, so, and actually, it looks like, it seems like nobody wanted, like, 30 Rock, there was pressure to fire him. It seems like they were reluctant to do it. And so they worked out a deal where he would go meet with gay teenagers, and he's been doing that for the last couple
of years.
They
made him run it through a hoop.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, they just said.
But it's funny to me who gets.
He's been punished.
Like, Anthony Weiner was made to pay.
Well,
Gilbert was made to pay, lose his contract.
He got fired, yes.
And that was like just not even an issue. They just killed his...
Because he made jokes about the earthquake and tsunami in Japan that most people can't even remember occurred at this point. Yeah, that's the funny thing.
I'm going to have to put up...
Everybody remembers Gilbert was fired, but people won't even remember what he was fired about.
That is, I think I will put that as a bonus because that's exactly what we talked about. Gilbert said, if I'd waited 2 weeks, no one would even notice.
You know, yeah, everyone... cared so much about that earthquake and tsunami and now no one even remembers it.
Well, people in Japan do.
I mean, but
you
know what I'm saying?
Whatever.
It was like, remember the oil?
Well, it's the same thing. Ebert got in trouble for calling Ryan Dunn a jackass for drinking and driving. Yeah. And people are like, "How he just died? How can you say that?"
Tragedy.
Because he died by driving into a car, driving into
comedy.
A tree, right?
That's the old line, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly.
Tragedy plus time you saw. Well, man, it's like how people don't care. How, the BP oil spill. Mm-hmm. When they finally sealed that fucking well, people stopped caring in what?
Instant.
5, 10, 20? Yeah, I mean, like, boom, it was off the news. It
there
was out of the
There was
thing,
a little bit
but
of
it was,
care.
Nobody cared anymore. Yeah, it was it was just like,
look. Do people care? Could you ask people to care now?
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
Could you ask people to care about Hurricane Katrina now? No. But there's probably still shit in New Orleans that's jacked up from Hurricane Katrina.
There still is. I'm
that
sure
no
there
one cares
is.
About.
I know there is, yeah.
But the BP oil spill, at least it carried over slightly because people right. were like, we got to clean it up.
But people, I think the general population can only care about one thing at a time.
Yeah.
And so when there's something new that happens, there's a new story.
Well, I think the media can only care about
well, that's true
certain things at
there's
a time.
There's only so much that they can cover, and something's got to lead the news every
and,
night.
And if it bleeds, it leads. And
that
they go
BP
to the
oil spill led every day for months.
All right, here's a...
The Japan tsunami and earthquake.
I'm
going to
throw out a word.
Every day
I'm
going to
throw
months.
Out a word here from earlier this year.
Oh, my God.
Egypt.
Yeah, Egypt. There you go.
Egypt had a full-on revolution throughout their prime minister who'd been in office for 30 years. Haven't heard one fucking peepity-boo since
Egypt.
He left, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Mubarak left, and everybody went, all right, nothing to see here. Right?
Not, yeah.
We don't know. Egypt could be on fire right now.
I don't
know
anything about Egypt.
Don't know
I don't
a
know,
fucking thing,
they,
right?
Yeah.
Haven't heard a thing.
Don't
the
even know.
The military took control, and they were like, we'll have elections in 6 months, and you haven't heard one.
We Egypt, haven't heard anything
one,
about Egypt.
So
yeah.
This is the problem. The news shifts, and it goes to something else. Mm-hmm. But Tracy Morgan, the greater point here, I think it's a conversation worth having, but is someone surprised that a black comedian had a homophobic routine?
People have they, are.
Like Eddie Murphy? Well, has anyone ever seen an Eddie Murphy
But I mean,
routine?
Like, who bought a ticket to Tracy Morgan and then bitched?
Was offended.
You know, like,
what
it's
queen,
one thing, like...
What queen went to Tracy Morgan?
It's one thing if Tracy Morgan would have said that on The Tonight Show or something, like, where you go...
You know what the problem with
okay,
Tracy
Morgan...
Okay,
that's probably inappropriate to do it there.
But see, the problem with Tracy Morgan is he's on a sitcom, and now...
Yeah, absolutely.
And Gilbert talked about... I talked to Gilbert about this, about... Gilbert's like, I think people know what they're getting with me. But
sure.
I'm like, but you're on Leno, and people might go, oh, he's...
Yeah, it's possible that whoever, this guy who was offended by Tracy Morgan, bought a ticket because he was a fan of 30 Rock, and he thought he was going to see, you know...
A sanitized no, but what I'm saying is, it's no secret that the black community is a little bit behind the curve.
Absolutely,
you know, on the whole gay rights
wasn't
issue.
That, didn't
right?
Bernie Mac do a whole thing about how his nephew was a faggot?
Yeah,
and then Bernie Mac, you know, he never took shit for that.
No, and I guarantee you could go to.
And I'm quoting him with the word faggot. I'm not just throwing that out there.
Remember,
but he said,
remember
my,
when
my nephew, he's a faggot.
Remember when BET Comic View would do like. They'd actually even do a bit where they had people doing the same premise, and they'd show like five people
doing.
They'd
intercut that. Yeah.
They'd be like, "What's up with the McDonald's drive-thru?" And then you'd get like five guys going, "I'm trying to put an order in for a quarter pounder," and then you know they would cut to the next guy doing the same bit.
Doing the same, but that was ridiculous. Yeah.
Right, and so you could probably go do, and this is you know I mean white comics have their own you know whatever pick a genre.
Sure, yeah.
There's the. Blue collar hillbilly comic guys, and they probably do the same material. But black comedians have had homophobic material. Fucking Richard Pryor, who everybody puts on the top of the Mount Olympus of comedy as the greatest comic of all time. Watch his shit now. Watch his stuff from the
70s. Yeah.
And if there's not like gay material or shit in there that offends you, you'd be stunned. I mean, you know.
What did Eddie Murphy, what was his big thing? Didn't he have the...
he did a whole bit...
The honeymooners were fucking each other.
He did a whole bit
ass.
About Michael Jackson and how gay he was. And this was before Michael Jackson was still partially
black.
He was partially black.
He was
black
and straight at the time.
Yeah.
It was amazing.
He was like dating Brooke Shields. Dating, with a big quotation.
Yeah.
He was still partially a Negro.
Yeah.
And he would he was maybe three or four nose operations away from looking like Swamp Thing or whatever the hell that was, that having the pig nose portal. But yeah, he did a whole bit about how gay Michael Jackson was, and then he did a bit about doing his act in San Francisco and how the firemen, they didn't need alarms. They just went, woo!
Yeah.
You know, and then he did a whole bit about it. Norton, what if you fuck me in the ass?
Yeah, he would do that.
And he did a whole bit.
Did he think about Mr. T getting fucked in the ass or something?
Yes, yeah. Did a whole bit.
He did all these bits about getting fucked in the ass and stuff. And
Eddie Murphy walked on water and was the greatest comedian in the world. I don't know if Chris Rock does it as much.
I don't know. I think Chris Rock kind of.
Chris Rock's a smart.
Moved on from
he's
it.
He's a
I
smart
think.
Guy.
Yeah,
he's
I
kind
think,
of a.
Yeah.
He's an evolved comic, but it's not a. You know, a lot of popular black comedians have this stuff. Now, you can talk about is that an issue to talk about the black community, but to get all in Tracy's shit like this was some
right.
shocking thing you've it, never it heard not, before? Yeah. No! I mean, you know, listen to athletes.
Oh, absolutely.
Who was the guy? Oh, somebody came out just did an NFL player was they get all churchy.
No.
And then he was like, look, I'd rather go to hell than let gays get married, you know.
Oh.
You gotta look this up. It,
right,
know,
off
whatever.
To hell, buddy. That's what I said.
Right.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Know.
It's but people act shocked by stuff all the time.
Yeah.
As a comedian, I know I feel this way. Do you feel that you're not capable of being not capable of being offended in that way?
I would never be offended by a comedian.
Yeah.
I think comedy is either good or bad, and whether
right.
it's
I'm offended by
right.
hacks. I'm offended
right.
by bad comedy.
Yeah, bad comedy is more offensive than.
But I'm not offended
right.
by content.
Yeah, I mean if you're doing something that's not funny,
yeah.
the subject matter isn't going to make it funny.
Did you see the Obama impersonator?
I saw a little bit of him. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now I didn't see the whole act that he did.
No.
But there was an Obama impersonator at a Republican leadership convention. Mm-hmm. And the guy was pretty good, actually. He wasn't a bad
impersonator. Yeah, and he told some edgy jokes, I thought.
They were fairly edgy, and they pulled him. They yanked him. Now, some people say they yanked him because he was starting to get too into the Republican
He gave
candidates.
An interview and said he was over his time, and he knew it.
Yeah, so they just
And they were giving him
that.
The light, and they housed him off the stage.
But they kind of tried to make a deal out of it.
Yeah, a little bit,
but,
sure.
You know, he might have just been over his time. But he did do one, and, you know, here was a sample of the joke. He's like, Michelle celebrates Black History Month,
mm-hmm.
and I celebrate half.
That's funny.
That was a good
That's
joke,
a good
I
joke.
Thought, right?
Could you be offended by it? Sure, but, I mean, if you're offended by it, that's your problem, not his.
So,
you know.
Some people made it stink about it being two things. One, the material content of it being racist, mm-hmm. and two, that he would get yanked because he was making Michelle Bachmann jokes or whatever. I don't know what happened, but... It's an example of people overreacting.
People overreact
you know?
To everything. Comedy, well, again, when you take comedy out of a comedy setting, everything seems offensive.
Right.
Like when you play a clip of Tracy Morgan, you know, like there were YouTube clips of that or whatever. It's like, well, yeah, well, then it seems offensive out of
did
the
you,
context of.
Did you see that, Chris? Speaking of that, did you see the John Stewart, Chris Wallace interview?
No, I did not.
Well, like one of the things Chris Wallace was like, well, let's talk about the network you work for. And he played a clip from a roast of, like, Lisa Lampanelli making a dick joke.
Yeah.
And Stewart was just laughing at him, like, yeah, of course I work at a comedy network.
Yeah.
Like, how are you comparing me to any kind of news operator?
Well, John Stewart.
It kind of proved his point about
Believe me, no, John Stewart doesn't get a bigger erection when he's part of the news. There's nothing he loves more than being part of the news.
That was probably the best point that they had to make.
Sure.
Now, if you see the interview, it's the Fox guys always go at him for the wrong thing. They always go at him for... well, you're a newsman too, and he's like, "No, I'm a comedian," and he's got room to get off on that argument
a little bit.
I don't really believe that he doesn't want to be a part of it.
Yeah, sure.
His argument was that I have a liberal opinion, but my first option is to entertain people.
Well,
and it's not an agenda. Anyway, it was his argument. But Chris Wallace showed that he was not aware of what comedy was.
Well, he ain't entertaining me. So Chris Wallace can take a flying leap. And Jon Stewart can follow right behind him, and I wouldn't miss that.
You not liking Jon Stewart?
I'm bored by it. I don't care. I don't need your wacky take on the news. I can watch the. I got it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I can goof on the news myself. I'm not. You know, and I know not everybody can, and I'm not saying that. You know,
well, you're
like,
not a guy. You're not a guy who watches a lot.
I see the ridiculousness in the news. If I see a story that is ridiculous, I get it already. I don't need you to goof on it.
Well, you're not a guy that watches a lot of comedy anyway, right? I mean, you're not.
No, I don't sit around watching a lot of stand up on TV.
Yeah,
I see tons of it live.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess we got to get into this, but I host a show every week and tons of comedy.
Well, you did.
No, I still do. Depending upon when you're listening to this. But yeah, we had some sad news in the comedy world tonight that affects me, affects the show. Mm-hmm. We have a history with this, but. Club Bart's legendary comedy night is coming to an end. In fact, by the time you're listening to this, it may already be over. The last show is, what is it? I want to give the date, right? Thursday the 23rd.
Mm-hmm.
It's It's the last Club Bart's comedy night. A show that's been running since 1999. So 13 years of live comedy, or what is that, 12 years of live comedy, is over. It ends on this Thursday night coming up. So tomorrow night as we're taping this. Corey, one of the original guys from Club Bart's comedy.
I was a founder.
And I've hosted the show for over 10 years. So. Mm-hmm. It's and of course we did live shows there. Our Kwanzaa show with some Club Bart.
Mm-hmm.
The Club Bart's anniversary show was there. The Corey and Joel radio show anniversary show was there. And Niels flew over from Germany to show up at the
Niels Yeppe Club Bart, number one super fan of the old C&J show
destination, all the way from Germany to go to Club Bart.
Came to that dump.
Claim to Club Bart. The Little Dumpy Club, and it's all over for Club Bart's Comedy Night starting tomorrow. So it's very sad, though, and I'll tell you, it is a thing that every town that's got a good comedy scene has a show like Club Bart.
Sure.
There's a place where it's an open mic. You go up there, you pay your dues, you learn the craft. You go on in the middle of the night. Sometimes there's no audience there, you know, whatever. But you go there, and you learn how to do it well.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, a lot of clubs will have an open mic night, but you don't learn as much from doing it.
Club open mic nights are a little different because it's a club.
Yeah.
And they have certain standards of who gets on. And
yeah.
You have to earn. And working a club open mic is good for you because you're getting a better audience theoretically,
sure.
Or you're getting a better situation. But, you're right. Like, what was the Chinese restaurant in the 80s in Boston? What was it? Wing Ho's or something.
Yeah, the Wing Ho or something. I forget what they.
The Ding Ho.
The Ding Ho. Yeah, they did a whole documentary about the Ding Ho.
The Ding Ho. Yeah. And there usually is in whatever city there. Luna Lounge was the alt comedy place in New York.
Mm-hmm.
You could name a lot of these places that are kind of non-traditional formats,
mm-hmm.
or genre or bars.
It's a place where all the comics get together. It becomes a little bit of a clubhouse.
Yeah.
It's guys, you go, you work on stuff, you do stuff. For, you know, a small club, a small audience.
And sadly, those places never last. And they get famous because people went, you know.
They become the place where everybody got their start. And there's always legendary wild stories about shit that happened
on
stage.
What was the place in Houston?
I don't know enough about the Houston comedy.
Yeah,
scene,
you know, if we were real comedy historians. But
I'm not a real
comedy. You know what I mean?
Comedy.
The comedy, the Houston Outlaws.
Yeah, the Houston Outlaws all did their thing.
There's always some place where they all came and hung out. And,
uh-huh.
Now, Detroit is not famous because it's Detroit.
Well, it's famous in Detroit, and
pretty much nothing from Detroit is ever famous.
Well, we've had a lot of out of town comics have come in there
other
and
than
done
Jack
sets.
White.
I mean, we had the late
great Greg Giraldo.
Greg Giraldo did a set there. We've had Jimmy Pardo,
Bill Dwyer, Skippy,
Skip Mark Price from Family Ties. Skippy was there.
I'd have to actually sit down and think of all the guys that
Rich
have
Voss
in.
Has done that club in the past. I mean, a lot of famous names. I can't even think about them all. I mean,
we'd have to really sit down and try and figure
it out. John Heffron, I think, has done that club.
Sure.
Know, who's big now, but is from Detroit. Geechee Guy, star of America's Got Talent.
We never did get Leno in there, but what do you
know? No, but you know what? For what it was, it's
sure.
The little club that could. It was a little. It was an open mic that's been running for you know, a long time, and
for years and years,
years and years and years.
Never got a tell over there.
Didn't get Dave a tell. It would have been a nice place for him to do. I think
I would have been great.
Yeah, but it's a place where I got my. I was the very first place I ever did stand up comedy. It's the place I met you. It's the place I met my current girlfriend. It is.
You've probably in. I don't know. There'd be a argument about who actually had done the most shows at Club Bart. You probably did the most.
I probably ultimately did the most.
Because hosted it
I hosted it every week for 10 years. Yeah, I did. I hosted that show about 500 times.
But, ridiculous.
Yeah, but it's coming to an end tomorrow. Basically, they were sold. Bart sold his lease and his liquor license and whatever. And it is going to become a French restaurant. And no comedy can happen in a French restaurant. So... we're looking for a new home for Comedy Night, and I'll announce that on the show when it's official. We're going to be. I'm hoping to start a new Comedy Night. We'll just have the same vibe and the same sort of setup as Club Bart, and maybe we can do another 10 years somewhere.
That's right, Joel. It just washes off Joel like a duck's back.
No, I love it. What do you want me to do?
No, it's sad. I mean, but you know what? we didn't get enough lead time to really know it was coming.
Yeah, we just found out today, just hours before we started the show, that it was all going down. So,
so maybe we'll should we put some effort in and try and tape some segments?
I don't know. I mean, we've done
something.
If people want to go listen to the Kwanzaa show, I believe that was December 2007.
Yeah.
That was live from Club Bard. And whatever we did in 2006, which would have been the first year anniversary of Club Bard.
Yeah.
You can listen to that. That would be from there as well. But, you know, it's a part of Ferndale, which is where I live, you know, big, you know, in the little bar scene there. It was one of the places you could always hang out. And lots of bands played there. The White Stripes played there at one point. And a lot of up-and-coming or Detroit rock bands have played there. Mm. And, you know.
It will not be the same.
Yeah, it's, you know, everything's...
How will we endure without Bart's grumpy ass sitting in there?
Well, Bart can retire now.
Let's look at just the guys from Detroit that are now having that are getting somewhere in their careers that started there.
Sure,
Newberg,
Chris Newberg. Yeah, got to start at Club Art. Met Chris there for the
Dave Landau is out in L.A. taping stuff right now.
Yeah, okay, Dave Landau. Yeah,
Dave was a regular Bart's for a while.
And, yep, absolutely.
Well, yeah, I'm sorry, I'm a little broken. I'm a little upset.
Well,
it's
okay to be upset, but you have to remember that, you know, most open mics don't last but 6 months.
No, and that open
and for this one to last as long as it did. But, you know, I mean, it's for new comics. I mean, they're really the ones that
are going
to
lose.
Ultimately are the ones that are losing out. That's why there needs to be a place for if you want to, you know, try to be a comic and try to, you know, try to, you know, do this for a living. If this is what you want to do, that was that Club Bart was always there for you.
Yeah.
And it's not going to be around anymore. And that's too bad. So,
Well, well, well.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's
goodbye.
Really, it's really almost too depressing to discuss right now. It's really, I mean, because.
It was the hangout. I mean, more than anything else, it's
as
like.
As much
you know.
As we used to hate that place and just go, oh, it's another terrible, crappy night at Bart's.
Well, sometimes the crowds were
the
terrible.
The room could be hostile.
Yeah.
The crowd could be outright hostile. You never knew who was going to come in there. You had people come in. We'd get in grooves where we'd have regular audiences.
Yeah.
And then we'd have just people would want randomly walking off the street.
Sure.
And people would start fights. And it was just a wild place to be. And we'd always bitch, oh, what a dump. Why am I coming here every week? And then you'd come back every week.
Yeah, and people would come every week. And
because it gave you the ability to do comedy the way you wanted it.
Yeah. It was, you know, you got out of it what you put into it, though. If you came every week and you learned how to do comedy. I mean, my first show.
I put
there,
a guy in a headlock one time.
Why had a giant Asian man tried to jump over the bar and kill me? But you know, that was the place. You know, I went there the first time I ever did comedy. Well, before I went there, I watched the Club Bart's comedy show. There was an article in the paper, which I don't have anymore. And I probably told the story on the show before, but please indulge me. I think it's appropriate at this time. There was an article in the Detroit News about this was the place where all the hot young comics were trying their thing.
I remember that news. I remember that article well because the woman who wrote it, Wendy Manface Case, who was in a band in Detroit, wrote that article, and everybody in the room said, Corey is the funniest guy here.
Sure.
Corey's really funny.
Yeah.
Bart, Todd, PJ, every comic she talked to said, Corey's like the star of the show.
Yeah.
And she didn't talk to me.
No, she profiled.
She profiled, like, the old women that
Who was the old woman that she profiled? I don't remember who that was.
Twyla.
Twyla, okay.
Who's probably dead now.
Yeah, I don't even know.
I don't know. She was
Twyla.
In her 60s.
Yeah, and then she profiled Young Gun
or
Derek.
Or 50s or whatever.
Derek Stafariak was the other guy.
Yeah, yeah.
And, well, but see, they had more interesting stories than you. Derek was a guy who had an office job, and he was like an engineer. And at night, he was this
right.
Comic.
I was just a funny guy.
And Twyla was this old lady trying to do comedy, and you were just this, you know, obnoxious
trying to actually do it.
20-year-old kid trying to do comedy. So you know, it didn't make for a great story. But I read that article, and I said
the photographer. They must have taken 12 shots of me. Like I posed for a bunch of stuff. It was ridiculous.
Oh,
and she didn't mention me one time.
Well, listen, all I know is I read that article, and I said, this is a place I was in college at the time and I was just getting out and I thought I was funny and I was making movies and I made some stuff at college that was funny and I said I should always try to do stand up but I never even been in a comedy club in my life. And when I was at New York University, I lived two blocks from the Comedy Cellar and I never even went in the place because I was afraid I'd get like you know, I'd go down the rabbit hole of never get out of that thing, and I was trying to be a good college student. And,
yeah.
You know, so I never went in there. And then when I found that they, you know, had this thing for Club Bart, I went in there one night, watched the show. I saw you on stage, and you were the funniest guy that night. And I saw P.J. Butland, who became a very good friend of mine and a very frequent guest on this show, you guys might remember. P.J., you know, was one of the first guys I saw there. And I met, you know, and then the next week I asked Todd,
mm-hmm.
who was the son of Bart.
Son of Bart.
Son of Bart, Todd. And I asked Todd, I said, Todd, you know, I've written something.
Which was probably the least known Ray Harryhausen movie.
son of Bart,
not as popular.
Son of Bart.
It's the Voyages of Sinbad.
So it's he's a terrible creature. He bores you to death.
Yes.
It's terrible.
I mean,
anyway.
It's not even as popular as Valley of Guanji. Anyway.
But, you know, I talked to him and I said, hey, I wrote some jokes. Could I come back next week and do a set? And he said, sure. So I came back the next week. Bombed terribly, got made fun of by you and everyone else in the room. But I kept coming back, I kept coming back.
And that was the vibe, you know? At Bart's, though. Yeah. We've had guys that have gone on and done half-hour specials.
Sure, yeah.
That came there and we dumped on them.
Yeah.
That's there's a different vibe in comedy these days, at least in alt comedy, I think, to a certain degree, where everybody's real supportive of each other.
Right.
And they slap each other in the back, and they clap, and they go, huggy, huggy.
I love you.
Uh-huh. And I don't know. That was never the vibe at Club Bart. Bart was always sort of a competitive vibe. In the early days, In the early days, the guys were... I think there were more guys that were committed to being on a professional track.
Sure, yeah.
In the early days at Bart's, and those guys would be real competitive for stage time and competitive for placement. And it used to be closing was a big deal at Club Bart.
Yeah,
It used to be the show was short.
Yeah.
And now it's like an epic marathon.
Well, it became... When I took it over, I decided that... Because, you know, over the years, I don't want to bitch about, you know, because God
knows.
You're
going to bitch. Go ahead.
But you know what I mean? It was like a thing where there was a certain guy who was running the show at a certain point before I took it over. I would show up and he would say, you can't go on.
Is he getting invited?
No, I don't want that guy there. He's a douche. And I would just say, you know what, like, you know, so then when I took it over, I said, well, what would have been the harm of me going up on some of these nights? Like,
uh-huh.
It just would have kept the crowd there. I was funny. I'd get some laughs. But he had these rules about you can only go on every other week and all this weird stuff. And I said, you know, when I run this comedy show, I'm going to put up everybody. If you're there at the sign-up time, you get on. I'm going to put up everybody. I don't care if you're funny or not. You get to go on.
A victory for egalitarianism.
And but
Joel,
you know, ultimately, it worked out. Because it made for happier comics. You know, if you sucked, you went on late. And you know, and the better guys went on earlier. The veterans went on earlier. But you know what? It worked as far as it kept the
guys
crowd.
Guys still bitch about when they go
sure,
on.
Sure. But you know what? That's just part of the deal.
Yeah.
I mean, would you rather not go on? Would you rather be told you can't go on?
What happened in the old days, there used to be only maybe 8 or 10 guys that would go on.
Yeah.
And so... Closing the show was a good thing.
I put up 19
because,
last week.
Right, right. Yeah. Closing the show was a good thing if 8 guys went on because the room was still there.
Right. But also, by having a longer show, it made more money for the club. We stopped charging a cover.
Sure.
We let everyone in for free. We just made money on drinks. And, you know, over the years, Bart said that, you know, that was his best night. Of course, Bart's closed now. What does that mean? I don't know, but it was, you know.
I think Bart wanted to retire. So
I think so, too. So, you know, it was, it's something that benefited me, you, and most people who did it got something out of it, I think.
Certainly,
anyone who's a professional comedian understands the void that will be there now that Club Bart doesn't exist. So
even the guys who had stopped coming long ago.
Yeah.
I never stopped coming to Bart's because I always felt I had a place that I could do stuff.
Yeah.
I could work on stuff.
It was always a place you could stop in and do 5 minutes. And
I could do the stuff in a way without anybody going, what was that?
Yeah.
I could just do my stuff.
Yeah.
And then maybe people would come up to me later and go, what was that? But I didn't have any management or anybody going, unless you did something stupid like light the room on fire, we've had people throw ashtrays.
Sure.
We had transvestites.
Yeah.
We had a puppet that did magic. That might have been before your day.
We had a magician and we had transvestite do magic.
We had CC Dynamite's bush hanging out of her pants. So many great memories.
We've had drunken girls and scary guys.
Oh.
And homeless people.
It's really, it is really a magical dump that will never be.
It's going to be hard, no matter, you know. And I'm trying to put together another show.
Because the stage, for those who've never been to Club Bart or heard us talk about it before, the stage was behind the bar.
Yeah.
So you stood over the bartender.
Yeah.
It was a weird setup.
But it actually worked for that club. Yeah. Because everybody had to face the stage, even if you were at the bar.
Right.
Because when you do a lot of these clubs or these one-nighters and the bar, the people at the bar have their back to you,
uh-huh.
It cuts them off from the show.
Right.
And makes it not as good. So Club Bart, even though its setup was weird, it actually worked for comedy.
Kind of creates an immediacy.
Yeah, it created an immediacy. Everyone had
right
to watch
the
show.
Stage. Right, right.
And if you didn't want to watch the show, you get the fuck out. You know, that's pretty much the rule.
Yeah.
So anyway, Club Bart has ended and is ending tomorrow night.
The
if
white, you know the
this.
White Stripes played there?
I have said that, yeah.
Unbelievable.
White Stripes played there. Joel Fragamenti played there for a decade.
And P.J. And Butlin was the original host.
Yeah, P.J. was the original host. And I always give P.J. credit.
Give shout-outs to P.J.
Yeah, I always gave shout-outs to P.J.
Moved to the Carolinas or something.
Well, good for him.
Yeah.
I'm sure there's he fits in down there. There's
oh,
more rednecks.
Absolutely. Sure. But P.J. really put a lot of his energy and his spirit into the show.
Yeah, he did. And P.J. did a lot of the right things. And like I said, there was a guy.
A lot of his attitude remained.
In between me and P.J., you know, it didn't work
Joel's
out.
Joel's still simmering.
Well, listen, that was a lot of what became. But I'm saying, under him, though, also people stopped coming, and the shows would get poorly and poorly attended. Fewer and fewer comics were showing up.
Wow,
we were doing that show with three and four comics because
feast
no one wanted
and,
to
feast
be,
and famine. Everybody.
Well, hey, listen, we're going out on top, or we're going out on the bottom, whatever. However.
Shows have been great lately.
The shows have been great lately. They've been terrific.
Been standing room. A lot of regulars coming back,
and yeah,
a new breed of comics and.
So anyway, it's wrapping up tomorrow night, Thursday night. Come on out. And if you've listened to the show over the years, you've heard us there. You've heard comedy at Club Bart. So,
Quantica, the great
Quantica
show.
Was there. And, you know, we had Jimmy Pardo there on our show. And it's been fun. I've been very proud of Club Bart over the years. And I'm proud of the comics that came out of Club Bart.
Sure.
And, you know, I don't know where the next big open mic is going to be in Detroit. Maybe there won't be another big open mic for years and years. Who knows?
Man, it would be a shame.
But, you know, the open mics that are out there that aren't Club Bart now are pretty bad for the most part. You know?
It's definitely had longevity that none of these other shows have done.
So,
all right.
Good night.
Sad news. What else?
Send your floral arrangements, cards, letters of sympathy. To Joel Radio, courtesy of Joel Fragamenti, P.O. Box.
With a T.
Go
Fragamenti.
Fuck yourself.
Ted Riot will be there.
No.
No, I'm kidding.
He didn't know. I was going to say he's probably on Facebook. Or is he? The Facebook is blown up. You got to see
I know.
It.
I posted a funeral.
The Facebook is blown up.
What's it up to now?
Do you want me to check real quick? All right.
Yeah, what's the story like now?
In about an hour, we had about 22 comments from people. And then there's been other threads that have opened. Well, softball player Jenny Finch had a baby. So,
oh, good. Yeah. Yahoo's headline. Why? You know, like Yahoo's still my head, still my homepage.
It is for me too. Yeah.
And I'm like, why?
Because those goofy headlines that no one else
that's,
would be reporting.
That's now. Why. That's why. Because Yahoo, in that trending category, you'll look in there and it'll be like, I swear to God, last week it said Abe Vigoda.
Abe Vigoda must be dead.
And
something.
I went, why is Abe Vigoda trending? Oh.
Yeah, see here, my girlfriend's thread. There's multiple threads.
Mm-hmm.
Jerry McAvoy checking in on the thread here.
Wow.
Saying
lots of people who don't live here anymore.
Yeah, he's saying it's Jerry McAvoy saying it was a great part of my life for yours. Thank you, Club Bart. Let's see.
You know what's great is I have an app on my phone to check Facebook.
Yes.
And I bet it hasn't pinged once. And I've had 400 replies to this thing. It's really the weirdest thing.
Yeah, let's see what is going on.
Wow, a lot of people on there, huh?
Yeah, it's been a lot of. We've got your thread that you started has, 23 comments.
Mm.
And Bill's has about, Bill's has 7 or 8. Heather's has 7 or 8.
Man,
so
it's a big.
I haven't even done the official Joel Fragamenti statement.
Haven't even.
I did. I posted on yours and I just explained that it was being turned into a French restaurant. So, but I have not given my official statement.
Yes. Well, the media is.
Me and
Hold on.
Me and Bam Margera will hold a joint press conference. Oh, they're here to speak to me.
Yes, there's
Corey, can you let
members
them in,
of the press, Mr. Fragamenti? What does this mean?
Yes. Can we start with the gay media?
How are you going to get gas money every week now? What will happen?
Yeah. Well, anyway, Club Barts is over. And
did you bang Jill? The media.
No, absolutely not.
Should we have a tribute to Frida?
No, we shouldn't have any tribute.
They had a waitress there at Club Bart. If we can do a
eulogy. I almost kind
of. If you'll forgive us a eulogy, and if you're still listening to this show, fuck yourself. You're still listening. Let me tell you, Frida was this giant bovine that used to work behind a bar there.
Yes,
she was like, she looked like a she looked like a Viking serving wench, except you wouldn't want to fuck her. Do you know what I mean?
Oh,
she looked like what a St. Pauli girl would look like in real life, like a big, fat Bavarian whore.
See, now that you've mentioned her name, I can't tell you the good Frida stories on the air.
Oh.
So,
there,
way to go.
What, good Frida stories?
There's good Frida stories, but
get
I can't
out of here.
On the air. Yeah.
Anyway.
All right. But yeah, she was there. She was the
honestly,
original.
Kind
well,
of
you
a,
know what her story was? When I, my first set.
Let me think about this. In 12 years, were there only like three or four bartenders?
Yeah, about, yeah. We had Frida, Marina, who was Bart's daughter.
Sure.
Jill for a long time.
Yeah.
And Melissa, that's there now.
And then
so.
Occasional fill-in, but those girls never
Yeah, occasionally Kelly would fill in or
yeah,
somebody.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah. Generally speaking, we've had about four waitresses over the history of Club Bart's comedy.
And the Laura's. Frida, the Laura's.
Yeah, Laura, the
waitresses.
Been, but you know what? I had a pint of beer with me on my first show, and I was like on the floor, and I knocked it over.
Oh.
And I'm telling jokes, and Frida handed me a rag and said, "You have to mop up the beer." Like, I was in the middle of my set, and I had to get down on my hands and knees and, like, mop up beer from the stage. So humiliating.
Oh, the many times at that place.
Good night to Club Bart's Comedy Night.
Well, we were going to, by the way, we were going to buy a new banner.
Yeah, maybe we'd take the old banner, and what are we going to do with the old banner? We burn it. It's
set it on
plastic.
I think we're going to burn it over
we'll
here.
We'll get cancer.
Yeah, we will.
Yeah. So that's it for Club Bart, everybody.
You know what we'll go do? We'll hang it on Chaplin's.
But think about that. I mean, that's, you know, Chaplin's, Club Bart, in Chaplin closed, what, about a year ago?
Yeah.
It closed at the beginning of this year, I think.
It's tough times.
2011, so. A lot of comedy, historical comedy places in Detroit are leaving us, so. But it's the economy. It's Detroit. How much shit in Detroit is closed?
Exactly.
That isn't a comedy club. A lot of it, so.
All right, kids.
All right, let's move on.
Depressing.
Let's move on to something completely depressing.
Yeah.
Those Guys Have All the Fun, the new book by Tom Shales and some other guy.
James Andrew Miller. Interestingly enough, Miller's the one out doing the press. I haven't heard Shales.
Well, Miller actually wrote all the acknowledgments and the intro, so I wonder how much Shales really did.
Shales must have done
if Shales
some of the
didn't
interviews.
Just edit it or something. You know,
he
what
probably
I mean?
Did a lot of the interviews.
Yeah, because James Andrew Miller is the guy who wrote all the acknowledgments. So I don't know, but this book is almost 800 pages. It's about 745 pages. I finished it yesterday. It took me roughly 3 weeks to read this whole book, which doesn't sound like a long time, but
yeah.
I thought I would tear through a book like that in a week, and it is so dense.
It's a monster.
And Corey went out and bought it. Corey was waiting for me to finish reading it,
yeah.
And then it seemed like I was on a pace to finish it sometime in 2014. So Corey went out and found a cheap copy
and
cheap, bought it.
So.
And I said, all right. But then what happens is the beginning of ESPN – until I don't know. In the book, it goes about page 220,
yeah.
Which is this chapter that starts with the hiring of Keith Olbermann. It is so boring, and it's just so dense about management and investors and satellite clearances. And there's how many pages on the America's Cup? I'm guessing you've already
there's
read
a good
that.
Four or five.
Yeah,
pages
it's
on the America's Cup.
Tons of stuff about the America's Cup, and it's so boring, and it's all executives, and you don't know who any of these people are.
I really. I am at that point in the book. I'm like, maybe almost 200 pages into it, and it's really, you do go, this is not. See, we have these guys also wrote a Saturday Night Live book.
Yeah,
the Saturday Night Live book just fucking sparkles the whole time.
Okay,
because it's all people you're familiar with.
Sure, yes,
and everybody. The only people who weren't in the book are like Bill Murray's in it, Eddie Murphy.
Yeah,
I think
he refused to do it.
Eddie Murphy was the only one who wouldn't do it.
Yeah,
Everybody else showed up.
And that's what it is. It's an oral history, so it's all just passages from interviews with these famous people who either ran ESPN or were anchors on ESPN or athletes that were covering on ESPN.
But all the guys in the early days of ESPN, you don't know.
Yeah, and all the executives and the investors and those guys, you have no idea who they are.
Literally the only name you're familiar with in the first 100 pages is Chris Berman.
Bob Lee and Chris and Berman, that's about it.
And I remember Tom Meese, but you know what?
He's not interviewed in it because he's dead.
Right.
I mean, they mention Tom Meese from time to time, but he's not interviewed because he's dead. And it just goes on and on about how much rights fees and negotiations and all this stuff. And you're just going, God, I just want to hear about Sean Salisbury taking a picture of his penis and how he got fired. And then that's in the book eventually.
So it's that first chunk is interesting if you're really interested in the history of cable.
Yes, but it's more about
you pretty much have to be.
It's not really about ESPN or the people you know on ESPN. It's about the history of launching a cable network.
Right.
And the history of, cable television.
They were funded largely by Getty Oil.
Yeah.
Which is J.P. Getty. Mm-hmm. and they weren't even, and like the only guy they talked to is this guy who wasn't a Getty family member. He was like the son's right-hand man.
Yeah, he would go out and.
He was basically Smithers.
Kind of, yeah. He ran, he acquired other properties outside of the oil company.
Mm-hmm.
So didn't he run golf courses? Isn't what he did? He
Something
built
like
golf
that.
Courses
yeah. they had
that Getty
estate.
Owned yeah. and resorts, and that was his thing. He'd go into Acapulco for months at a time, and he acquired ESPN and became...
The guy's name is Stuart Eavy, and he's pretty interesting, but also repellent. And you got to read about that guy for 150
I watched a YouTube lecture from him because I wanted to know more about him. And that's all I could really find is he was at college lecturing about how he invented ESPN. And look, he's responsible in large part for their success, at least in the early days. But it doesn't mean that you want to hear about him.
The guys who founded ESPN were these guys named Bill and Scott Rasmussen.
Their father and son.
And Don was the brother, too. And they were father and son. And they were, what were they running, like a... Connecticut sports reporting?
I think the guy, the father, Bill, was a PR guy for the Hartford Whalers or something.
Right.
He was in media relations, and he left that, and they decided they could have run, I think, essentially college sports from Connecticut.
Yeah.
And it would be a local cable channel.
I think the original premise was it was going to be Connecticut-based with, some Big East games.
Yeah.
Now, why they thought anyone would care about Connecticut...
Yeah. Well, they thought it would be regional. But then what happened was when they figured out they could get on a satellite, and that satellite for the same price could serve the entire country, and then it became a national. Anyway, you can read this book. And by the way, after the, after the 220 pages,
it gets good.
It's all the stuff you remember, all the scandals and all the memorable shit that happened on ESPN. It's all in there. It goes through the LeBron James, the decision, and Jim Gray is interviewed extensively, and Joe Namath kissing Susie Culber, and you can hear what
Rush
a creep. Rush Limbaugh on the Countdown show.
What a big jerk Olderman was.
A lot of Tom Jackson hating on Rush Limbaugh, so they're both interviewed. Limbaugh's interviewed
I
Tom
did
Jackson's.
Thumb a little bit ahead, and on one rivalry I was not aware of is that Kornheiser and Berman hate each other.
Yeah, Tony Kornheiser hates Chris Berman. There's a lot of stuff about what a scumbag Mike Tirico is. About how he tried to finger bang a chick that worked at ESPN.
Well,
it's great.
I will say, in the early part of it, what's interesting is that they all hate each other.
Yeah.
Every one of those executives who you've never heard
of. Yeah, the executives are all
fighting.
They
all go, well, Chet was an asshole, and Stu was a jerk.
Exactly.
And I couldn't stand, Steve Bornstein.
Yeah.
I hate all those pricks. Uh-huh. And they all hated each other, so that's kind of entertaining.
But you also get into what a boys' club it was, and they would have the Playboy channel on in the newsroom, and there'd be women trying to work in there. And
well, not to give away the whole book here, but at one point, the secretary was blowing delivery guys.
Yeah, there was
for extra cash.
Well, did you get to the part where the secretaries were turning tricks out of a corporate apartment in New York City?
Yes.
Yeah, there's a lot of that in there. It ends up being a good book. I would give it... On a scale of 1 to, letter grade, scale of 1 to 10, 5-finger scale, what do you want?
Well, I have not completed the book, so I will
For me,
it,
I'll give, what do you want?
I'll give it an incomplete.
Yeah, but I would give it, reading the whole thing, about a 7 out of 10.
Okay.
Which is a good book, but not a great book.
I will tell you this.
The stuff you like is going to be like a 9 out of 10, and the shit you hate is going to be like a 5 out of 10, so ultimately.
I'll tell you this, that the Saturday Night Live book, mostly because it's more famous people,
yeah,
and it's more intimately involved, and there are some of the same names pop up in that book, like Dick Ebersol.
Yeah, Dick.
Don Olmeyer.
There's a lot of rival executives who talk about ESPN and the threat to, you know, network sports coverage and stuff like that in there. There's some really good stuff. One of the best things, the formation of PTI is really good, I thought.
No.
And
see, I got to slog through more stuff.
But
to
it starts to move quickly. It took me 3 weeks to read that book. It took me 2 weeks to read 200 pages and then a week to read 500 pages. So
right.
If that makes sense.
It flies.
Yeah. But one of the best things is how Bill Simmons talks about how Mike Tirico was a jerk to Kornheiser in the booth and that, you know, he says it's like professional wrestling. When guys are telling jokes, you need to sell for them.
Right.
If you're not going to sell in pro wrestling, you're going to make the other guy look bad. Mm-hmm. He says, you know, Kornheiser would tell jokes. Tirico would never laugh.
Right.
And then Kornheiser left Monday Night Football. They got John Gruden. And all of a sudden, Mike Tirico has never laughed more hysterically at John Gruden. Like, John Gruden's that funny,
well,
you know?
You know what? That will say that. That is one issue I might have with this book over the SNL book.
What's that?
The SNL book is filled with interviews with comedians and writers who are very funny.
They're funny, yeah.
And they go at each other in funny ways.
Yeah.
The ESPN guys think they're funny.
Yeah. Well,
some of them are witty.
Right.
But I think more often, Chris Berman doesn't he come off kind of like a big blousy?
He does. He
jerk,
really comes
like
off
really
as
is.
Berman. Yeah. Bill Simmons is very funny in this book.
Mm-hmm.
Simmons has some
There's
good
a
lines.
Couple guys.
Olbermann has some good lines
right.
in there. Craig Kilborn's interview.
Right.
He has some good, but
those are the funniest guys.
Sure,
that
those
were
are
on
the
ESPN.
Funniest guys. Kornheiser's dirty. He's saying fuck all the time in the interview, so that's good. It's a good book. I mean, it's not.
Do you know what I'm saying though?
Yeah.
ESPN guys
sure.
really think.
Yeah.
I'm sure when I get to the Rich Eisen material, he's
think, barely in it.
He's
going to
think he's hilarious.
He's barely in it, but Eisen's in it for a second. So it ends up being a good book at the end of the day. But I don't know if you're some lunkhead sports guy who all you do is watch ESPN. I don't know if this book's really for you. It's kind of just for like media dorks almost. Like,
yeah, well, which is what we are.
Which is what we are, because I don't care about ESPN.
Sure.
Like, I had to constantly look up who these sportscasters were that were being interviewed because I didn't really remember some of them. You know, even the people that are on now, like, I didn't know who. What's the one woman's name? Like, there's two sports.
Hannah Storm?
No, Hannah Storm I know, but there's two sports center anchors.
Robin
that,
Roberts.
They're married to each other.
Oh, really?
And I didn't even know who they were.
Well,
yeah. And
I'll tell you what, you know what? As much as I watch ESPN right now,
yeah,
a lot of those guys are interchangeable.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely.
And in the Dan Patrick, Olbermann, Kilborn era,
right.
The guys all had a distinctive footprint.
But that's what they want. And it's in the book they talk about. They don't want
stars.
They
don't want stars.
ESPN is the star.
Right.
They want you to show up and do your job.
Well,
and you
that's why. Well,
be.
And then what happened was after Olbermann and Patrick left, Dan Patrick took longer to leave. But after that team broke up, a bunch of guys came in and tried to do their
Well, Eisen was one of those guys who replaced
were
Olbermann.
Trying to do
in
the
Kilborn,
shtick,
and
right?
Guys, yeah.
And then that's when it led to Boom Goes the Dynamite. And every ESPN announcer was making jokes about, you know, he shot that from another area going,
well,
God, way downtown.
They say that Berman does his lines in the meetings.
Well, Berman started that off.
Yeah,
I
but
mean,
Berman, that's how Berman like works out his material. He'll do stuff in meetings, and if people laugh, it makes it onto the show and stuff.
Right.
So it's
Chris Berman was really the first guy that did kind of comedy.
Sure, yeah.
He started giving everybody nicknames.
Are you forgetting about the great Van Earl Wright at CNN? And also briefly at WDIV, Channel 4 at a time.
Van Earl Wright!
And you go, back. Wasn't that him? Who was back? Oh, that's Berman. What did Van Earl Wright do?
What did Van Earl Wright do?
Now, I know what he did. He did, goes deep over the wall in left field. He did it, but that was deep. Wasn't it deep?
Yeah, deep over the wall in left field.
Yeah,
I remember the
I
great,
can't do his voice, but
well,
that was Van Earl
you know,
Wright's call.
And, of course, the all-time great Champ Kind with his famous call of whammy.
But, I mean, guys will
That's from Anchorman.
I don't even know what that is. But, I mean, there's always guys.
Whammy!
They'll do all kinds of wacky references, and it does get too much of
My favorite was Kilborn, who was really interesting. I like Craig Kilborn. He's apparently, by all accounts, much like Olbermann, a real jerk.
Yeah.
Although
Olbermann,
I think
Olbermann is hated uniformly in this book. Nobody has a nice thing the word to say about Olbermann in this book.
What about Patrick? Doesn't he say anything nice?
I think he does, but I think
Dan's
he doesn't
like
say
his,
anything about. He well, doesn't say anything positive.
This
or
This is kind of
about.
Like if they did a book on Detroit comedy, you and I would probably get a lot of heat. And You and I would probably go.
No, it's just that Olbermann. Like, Olbermann makes sense in some of his arguments about, like, we were underpaid.
Sure.
And I get that, but he was just, like, his arrogance and stuff. Actually, oh, no. You know, here's what they say nice about Olbermann, not about personally.
That he was talented.
They say that, like, he could write a one-hour Sports Center in 40 minutes.
Right.
Like, he could just sit there, and he was a whiz with coming up right. with material and stuff. So that's Which really is, where he gets complimented.
That's kind of the picture I've gotten of Keith Olbermann as he's gone on to politics. Yeah. Is that he's a prodigy and a talent. Obviously, some people, like, because he's got a new show, which is basically his old show.
Yes, that's what they're saying.
And, like, a lot of the people that are on his show are the same ones that were on, you know what I mean? Like,
you've watched the new show?
Yeah, I watched the new show. And, like, Michael Moore is on there. But, like, it was a lot of the same contributors that were on the old show. The ones who didn't have MSNBC contracts have come over and done his show.
Okay.
So he obviously can have relationships with some people.
Yeah.
But he's a kind of, you know what? A lot of talented people.
The argument is that he thought he was better than everybody else.
Yeah, sure.
And people didn't like his attitude, and he was a jerk.
Over the years, kind of grown to appreciate those kind of personalities, seeing as I am one. I just, you know what I mean? I oftentimes, if everybody hates a dude and they go, what a big asshole.
Yes.
And he's the guy with all the talent, mm-hmm. I start to think about who's calling him an asshole.
That's true. I mean, I get what you're saying.
So Keith, obviously hard to get along with, but for a reason. But you know what? Everybody hates Chevy in the Saturday Night Live book.
Yeah.
Chevy is the Keith Olbermann of that book. Everybody, to a man, hates Chevy's guts. They all hate him. And Chevy says things in that book, in both the interviews he gave and the quotes everybody else gives about him, that are appalling. So that Saturday Night Live book, I would give that one 4 out of 5.
All right. Well, you brought it over today.
The only problem with the Saturday Night Live book is it does kind of get a little redundant.
Right.
And by the time you get into Jimmy Fallon and Seth Meyers and Horatio Sands, those guys.
Yeah, the more recent stuff at ESPN was boring too. It was not.
Those guys aren't that interesting.
It was not as good. Well, it's not as great as. If you want an inside television book, I still think the best two to me, and I'll read this as an L book, are Bill Carter's books, The Late Shift and The War for Late Night.
Those are good, too.
Leno and Conan. Terrific. I mean, those you almost can't put those down. Yeah. I had no problem putting down this ESPN book.
Well, I'm reading it, like, in toilet shift.
Yeah, it's,
I mean, that's really when I
read it. I'd eat breakfast, and then I'd try to read. But once you get into about the 200 and something pages, but you know, you got to read about the launch of ESPN, the magazine. Boring.
And I heard James Miller say that there was a longer cut that was like 300 pages longer.
It's too much.
That it was a 1,000-page book.
I mean, look, they're trying to be comprehensive, and they want to be authoritative, because when I was on Amazon and I was buying this, a lot of those guys, Rasmussen and Stu Eby, have all written ESPN tell-alls already.
Right, right, right.
So, and you know, Patrick and Olbermann wrote a book about ESPN while they were there. And so they, you know, people have tried in the past to write these books. And I guess their guys, this is the be-all, end-all ESPN book.
I think it's
And I get that trying to be, but it makes for not, it's not as fun. It's like a movie that's too long.
Well, you know, Tom.
It's still a good movie, but it's too long.
Tom Schales was a longtime film critic or TV critic at the Washington Post. Mm. So I think he's coming at it from a sort of authoritative critical. This is not just a scandalous tell-all. This is the official critical statement about the value of ESPN.
And actually, they started this book, and ESPN would not officially partake, and all of the anchors and everyone was banned from talking to these guys.
Right.
And eventually, I think they capitulated and said,
they talked to the
we
guys.
Better be part of this.
I'm sure that they went and talked to the guys who weren't there anymore.
Yeah, absolutely. And they just the ESPN's official stance on it went like, well, we should probably cooperate.
Is Charlie Steiner?
Or we're going to go, oh, yeah, Charlie Steiner's all in that.
How much, you know, there weren't a lot.
Comes off very well, by the way. I like Charlie Steiner.
Now, in as much as I've read of it so far, there aren't very many athletes that are talked to.
There are. You're going to read some quotes from Landon Donovan.
Yeah.
There's not a lot of athletes. Mike Tyson is interviewed.
Like Richard Petty talked about how they kind of made NASCAR happen.
The NASCAR thing. Yeah, Landon Donovan is in it. Peyton Manning is in it briefly. Not a lot of athletes.
Landon Donovan's on the cover, and I went, really?
Yeah.
Because soccer, I guess World Cup is big on ESPN.
The guy, well, that was the thing. The guy, John Skipper, who eventually takes over ESPN and runs it, was a big soccer fan. And he wanted them to get, and they actually had to bid for the World Cup. They didn't have the World Cup,
right.
And they outbid NBC, I think, to get the ultimate rights to it. So they had the 2010.
ABC's had the World Cup for a long time, haven't they?
Yeah, but I think they might have only had... They didn't have the whole thing or something.
ABC, was he...
They ESPN officially started the World Cup, I believe, in... Well, I think they might have done the 2007 or the 2000.
We're getting real wonky on this show.
Okay, let's.
But I will say that one thing ESPN did is kind of kill ABC Sports.
That's all in the book.
That's ABC Sports.
There's a big chunk of that. And that's interesting.
Kind of ceased to exist.
Well, it's a lot of stuff where, you know, you have any sort of merger, and they've done this when wrestling companies buy each other out or whatever, where
one culture kills the other.
Kills the other, and it's like, oh, we're going to keep all you guys, and we'll use all you guys. I'll have a home now at ESPN, and they all go. Well, that's the thing. There's one of the most interesting.
I did like the bit where they said that they'd picked up AWA.
Yes.
And the guy had to have a cheat sheet of the wrestlers that were working AWA.
Yeah.
And the one guy, and then one of the boardroom guys got excited when they said Sergeant Slaughter.
Yeah, you got Sergeant Slaughter. Oh, my God. One of the most interesting things in this was the war for Monday Night Football.
Right.
It's actually probably, because I love football, to me that was the best part of the book, because they're talking about how, you know, ABC was letting it go, because their argument at ABC was like, well, we already have network shows. To put football on takes away from our network shows.
Mm-hmm.
So to give for 4 months a year, we're giving up this prime time when we could develop hit franchises, which they ended up doing with Dancing with the Stars on Monday nights. So they're saying, well, there's this battle, and it ends up at ESPN, and they had a Sunday Night Football crew
and that
production team.
That works in NBC's favor now, because now NBC doesn't have to develop Sunday nights.
Well, that's true, too, but what the argument comes down to, they had a Sunday Night crew and a production team, a director, producer, everybody, and a whole announcing crew. Then they had the Monday Night ABC guys. And they had to decide between the two sides. And, you know, they had Michaels and Madden, and then they had Theismann and Mike Patrick and these guys on the other side. Mm-hmm. And they have to decide between the two. And it's really fascinating what ends up happening. I don't want to ruin it for you.
All right. Well, I will.
But it's all in there. And that, to me, was one of the best
books. I would recommend that book if you are a big television wonk.
Yeah.
If you're a nerd about TV. I'm a nerd about – I realized the other day about – how many subjects I'm a nerd on.
Yes.
It's quite a lot.
You found out I was a nerd about Jackass. You had no idea.
Sure. I mean, there's many subjects that I'm a nerd
on. Well, for me, sometimes I get into shit, and then I've kind of read or seen it all, and I go, okay, I don't. There's really not much. Like, you know, magic.
How much more Beatles material could you squeeze
out? I'm running out of Beatles material. I had to get books that are... I'm not reading books
that are out of print.
Books that are out of print. No, I am now, because it's just...
And then you've read the same stories a dozen times.
It is, yeah. And what happens is a lot of the books that have come later, like I know you read... who's the guy that wrote that big, giant Beatles book that you read?
Bob Spitz.
Bob Spitz's
Which is
Beatles
kind of
book.
A lot of people said it clips from other books.
Right, that's the problem, is all of these kind of first person, like I have Pete Shotton's book about John Lennon. Pete was John's best friend. And that book's been out of print for years. And I found a secondhand copy at the used bookstore, and I'm reading that. I'm reading Alan Williams' book, The Beatles' First Manager. I'm reading his book. And all of these stories from all of those books ended up going into a lot of these other books. And Hunter Davies' official Beatles book that came out in 68, which has been, you know, repressed over the years, and they add chapters and updates to it. A lot of the stories about, you know, Germany and Hamburg and stuff started in that book and made it into the other books. So that's what happens, is now I'm kind of going back and getting the first... You know, reading these books and reading these stories in these books, sort of the original sources for them. And that's where I'm at now with the Beatles. Yeah, I've read a lot of comprehensive stuff. But then Mark Lewisohn is putting out his definitive 3-volume biography of the Beatles.
Wow.
That is going to be, apparently the first volume is going to be like 1,500 pages.
Right.
And there's going to be 3 volumes.
But then you start doing, well, I'm going to read this John Lennon biography. And I'm going to read this
I've read a
Paul McCartney bio
that
just came out that's every bit as thick as the ESPN book.
Yeah.
And if you can get through the Say Me era or whatever, you know what I mean?
Say you and me.
If you can get through that shit.
Well, there's the Beatles. Yeah, there's solo books on the Beatles. There's Beatles.
There's Wings. Then there's post-Wings when he's like, give my regards to Broad Street.
Well,
if you can get through that garbage.
Well, there's three definitive solo McCartney eras. There's before Wings, then there's Wings, and then there's post-Wings.
Yes.
And we're still in post-Wings.
Right.
Now we might be post-Linda. That might be because now he's got a whole live.
Sure.
his live touring resumed.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to Paul McCartney, by the way, in about a month.
Yeah, go
see July 24th, Comerica Park, baby.
It was Paul's birthday the other day.
It was. He turned 69 last Saturday.
So he's now 5 years older than a joke song he wrote
when I'm 69.
About when I'm 69.
By the way, speaking of 69, but I'm bummed. No, sad news. More sad news. What does that have to do with 69?
That's what we're going
to
do tomorrow night.
No, listen.
It's going to be the highlight of
also sad, a guy died at the age of 69. Clarence Clemons.
Oh, yeah.
From the E Street Band, a legendary sax player. Mm-hmm. 69 years old, yeah. Dead. I never got to see the E Street Band live. Always wanted to.
Everybody loved Clarence Clemons. He was a big, warm-hearted, lovable fella.
Yeah.
Affable, the star.
The affable Negro.
Thank you. Yes.
I'll say it of you.
He was a big old Uncle Ben type.
Yeah.
And no, everybody liked Clarence Clemons. He seemed to have a real big, warm personality. I'm going to say this about Clarence Clemons. I'm going to say this right now. I fucking hate saxophone and rock and roll music.
Well, wait a minute. Oh, well, it depends.
Post 1962.
Okay. No.
I hate saxophone.
It was fine in Bill
rock
Haley
and roll.
In the comments and stuff,
you know,
but it was fine in
sure.
No.
Little
no, no,
Richard
no, no.
could have a saxophone.
No.
Saxophone and rock and roll.
I agree with you. If you listen to it, there was a comedy club, Wise Guys in Novi, okay?
Yes.
And they used to play a George.
Where they watched Jackass.
They used to play a George Thorogood live CD.
Shut it.
And it was the music, like the music before the show would be this George Thorogood CD. The saxophone on this George Thorogood live thing is the most obnoxious bullshit. It like repeats every line like George Thorogood would say. One shot, one whiskey, one beer. That's annoying. But what Clarence Clemons and Springsteen did was they did like a Phil Spector kind of wall of sound where all the instruments sort of merged. I mean, there would be sax solos in those Springsteen songs.
You know what?
But a lot of what Clarence Clemons played was like was a lot of, you know, the guitars and the organ and the saxophone sort of blending
now,
to form one sound.
Don't get me wrong. I like horns.
Okay.
But I usually don't like horns in rock and roll. I like horns in like Sly and the Family Stone.
Okay,
in
funk or
right?
soul.
Funk
yeah.
Funk and soul.
I know
Al Green.
Motown. Yes.
Al Green had horns but in rock and roll music, the saxophone after the 50s can suck my dick. I hate the saxophone in rock and roll music.
If you hear these,
I'm sure there
the sax solo to Jungle Land on Born to Run is terrific.
Somebody's going to go, but what about Young Americans? Don't you love Bowie Corn? Well, I do, but I don't really like Young Americans all that much. And that's good. You know, I just don't like sax in rock and roll.
No, believe me, Sting can take his saxophone and shove it up his ball sack.
Speaking of Bowie,
yeah,
who I've seen a couple times, but I saw Bowie with Tin Machine.
Okay, yes.
Okay?
You poor man.
I know. And this is like a couple years after he did Sound and Vision and retired.
Yeah, he did a tour where he retired
Was it Sound and Vision or was the other? Was it like something
Sound and Vision was a box set, and then he toured that, and I think he retired all those songs and then started
Tin
Machine.
And he had like, I have retired my whole, I'm Dave Bowie.
Yeah.
I've retired my collection of songs from the 70s.
Right.
And he came out and did Tin Machine.
Yeah.
And it was him and Soupy Sales Kids.
Right.
And a guy named Reeves Gabrels.
Oh,
remember this. Hunt and Tony Sales and Reeves Gabrels. And he came out and he was like, I'm just in the band.
Yeah.
And he introduced the band. He's like, and I'm Dave Bowie. Like, really?
Uh-huh. Yeah, I know. That was
and
a little ridiculous.
He did a 20-minute sax solo during the Tin Machine concert. And I wanted to fucking kill myself. And I'm sitting there going, this was at the State Theater.
Okay, yeah.
So it was, and I was on the ground floor.
Bowie's
and I'm sitting there
doing
going,
small venues with Tin Machine.
Right. And I'm sitting there going, we didn't pay that much to get into Tin Machine, like $15.
Okay.
And I went, I'm 20 feet away from David Bowie, one of my favorite musicians of all time, and I want to kick him.
Yeah.
Because he's playing a goddamn saxophone.
Right. McCartney will do one or two Fireman tracks at his
concert,
and you'll be like, what the fuck is this? But McCartney, you know, plays all the Beatles songs, plays all the
Fireman
songs.
Is like his experimental, like almost techno-y.
Yeah, it's
stuff.
Him and Youth, the producer Youth.
Yeah.
And they do experimental, freeform songs, and he'll do.
Although
he'll do,
it'll be like a techno track with like a do-do-do. Like you hear a little bit of McCartney coming through in it, right? Just a little bit of that, a hint of it will come through, and you go, oh,
yeah, he,
your mother should know, and you just like boom, 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 boom. What a nice day, boom, boom. Boom. Lovely day for some tea. Boop,
but McCartney
boom.
Knows. McCartney knows where the bread is buttered, though. He's not David Bowie.
I know where the bread is buttered. It's like that. The fireman is it? Mine? It's not. I'm not really. I'm not totally inaccurate about that.
But he only does. But he'll do one of those. That's my thing with McCartney. He'll do one of those. Like McCartney will put out a new record, and he'll go on tour and play one track from it.
Sure.
You know what I mean? So that's
he's
fine.
Not doing the whole show.
He doesn't do the whole thing. He knows people want.
That's
to hear
the worst.
Hey Jude,
is when guys
and
come
get
out.
Back.
It's when guys come out and they do. Don't act like you're not going to do Goodbye Yellow Brick Road, Elton John.
Yeah.
Right? Elton John's a whore who'll just play his whole catalog.
I think, so. I think Billy Joel's the same way.
He'll do
I don't
Daniel
think they,
every goddamn night.
I don't think
like
they try
the
to
Jets.
Do...
But there are some guys who get like, that's in the past.
I'm going to play the new record.
You know what's amazing? You know, the CD industry is dead.
Yes.
And it's going to reduce down to like specialty stores again.
Probably,
where
yeah.
Where they'll only be kind of used vinyl in CD stores. Mm-hmm. But we were at like Best Buy,
yes.
And Best Buy shrank their DVD section.
Their
CD
music
section
has shrunk. Yeah,
Borders got rid of their CD section.
Yeah.
And I used to work in the music section of Borders. And when I worked at it, we carried like I want to say 7,000 titles. Like
yeah.
We had a jazz section that
yeah.
would knock your ass on.
Right.
We had an R&B section and mm-hmm. blues and everything. Anyway, we were at Best Buy and we saw they still had a stack of, and they were like 25 cents or 75 cents.
Oh.
Chris Gaines, the When Garth Brooks
became a rock and roll guy.
Remember when Garth Brooks tried to do a rock album and he put it out under a different persona? You know what I mean?
Yeah,
these guys want to do these experiments. And
guys,
no one. You literally could still get the Chris Gaines album.
Yes.
Unbelievable.
75 cents.
They should just bury that next to the E.T. cartridge. Just in the same landfill.
All right, and should we get into movies? Should we get into stuff?
Yeah, let's
do
a real quick lightning round.
Because, I mean, you saw Cars 2 and it's coming out this week.
Yeah.
And it's no good. I mean, is that the least liked? Cars 1
Cars
is
1
the least liked Pixar
is
movie,
the least,
right?
Until this.
Until this?
This is dreadful. It's the first Pixar movie I could literally say is awful.
And this is their first sequel that's not Toy Story, right?
They've only done sequels to Toy Story, yeah.
Yeah.
And, and don't get me wrong, I love Pixar, and you got to do that now. You have to reflexively go, yes, it's like you have to bow down and serve the master.
I don't.
It's like you got to.
I don't.
You got to kiss. I know, but everybody insists,
right?
Because you don't want to be uncool and go, I don't like Pixar.
I've seen the last three Pixar movies, and I thought they were all good.
Yeah,
but they weren't great. I mean, you know,
I think WALL-E is genius.
Well, WALL-E turns into, you know, Tom and Jerry at the end.
It's a little too chasey at the end, but I do think a lot of WALL-E is brilliant.
I do, too.
I liked Up, although Up has the same problem, too.
Up is even more offensive, but the beginning of Up is kind of brilliant.
Up is great, and then it falls apart a little bit, but I still liked it overall. Here's the thing. There's parts of both of those movies that are as brilliant as anything you've seen in a movie.
Yeah.
In
right.
segments.
Sure.
There's nothing in this that's like...
Yeah, Cars looks annoying as hell.
Well, the first Cars was the worst Pixar movie in general because you just can't... Like, WALL-E, even though it was a robot, it was a really emotionally connecting, emoting character.
Yeah.
This is a fucking... It looks like a toy. It's a cartoon toy car.
Yeah.
There's no in to that. You can't get an emotional in to a car. You can't hug a car unless you're fucking Dream Cruise queer.
Sure.
Or you're one of these guys that has sex with
It wasn't like
tailpipes.
Your adorable childhood toys, like Toy Story.
Toy Story, those toys come alive. Yeah. Right. And, you know, but Toy Story is about, people get involved in those because it's about something we can all relate to, which is childhood and the loss of childhood. And I'm sure everybody, unless they're a complete jerk, had that feeling of like their toys were alive when they weren't looking at it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Or you put the toy away properly because you didn't want it to be hurt or something. You know.
Now these cars movies just seem like they're just like bad satire of other movies with cars.
Yeah, they're okay. Here's the high comedy in Cars 2. It's like a Grand Prix, and they go to a bunch of different locations mm-hmm. around the world. And the announce team is Brent Mustangberger and Daryl Cartrip. And
so
then you
got to
hear, like, Daryl Waltrip doing,
and it's really,
boy, this is Lightning McQueen is sure hitting the corners here, and you're going, I don't want to hear the NASCAR.
Yeah.
Why don't I got to hear it in a kids movie? Yeah. And it's just annoying. And then, of course, they put Owen Wilson was the star of the last Cars, mm-hmm. and this one they've put in front Larry the Cable
Larry
Guy.
The Cable Guy. Is,
so what you have is a character playing a character.
Right, yeah.
Right?
You're being played by a fictional, yeah.
It's a fictional character right. doing a even right. more fictional version yes. of that character.
The character will be played today by Mickey Mouse.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's right. the same thing, yeah.
It would be like, yeah. So it's like Dan Whitney is the guy who is known as Larry the Cable Guy, and he's doing a character, and then he's going to do another character yes. on top of that character. Yeah. And I'll tell you what, man, you can only listen to so much of that.
But, I mean, he's also doing the Larry the Cable Guy character, so it's like it's almost like
he's doing a version of
Larry the Cable Guy. It's an animated
Larry
the Cable Guy movie, essentially, right. is what right. it becomes, and that's, uh-huh. nobody wants that.
Sure.
Well, is this gonna
Here's an example. They go to Japan, and one of the Japanese cars goes, would you like to try some wasabi? He just says, wasabi? And Larry the Cable Guy goes, well, not much. What's up with you?
Oh.
And you just sit there going, I don't want to watch this fucking yokel
yeah.
do this in a live-action movie.
Yeah.
Why do I want to watch him as a tow truck?
In his live-action movies, we all know the range
they're
he
horrible.
Has.
They're horrible.
From this horrible Larry the Cable Guy, what is it, Pest Exterminator
yes.
or something? What was the movie?
Oh, God. Larry the Cable Guy, I saw
Food
Delta
Inspector.
Fart.
What was it,
Here's
Delta
the best
Fart?
Part. The studio refused to screen Delta Farce,
uh-huh.
so I had to go see it at midnight. I had to sneak in when they were building the prints at
yes.
the theater.
Okay.
And I used to have a theater that would let me do that no more.
Yeah.
But, yeah, that's how bad that was. And then I got in a fight with Lisa Lampanelli because she did a guest spot in one of his movies. And I'm just like, how can you be this hardcore comedian and be involved with the hackiest hack in
yeah.
the hack town? But it's a paycheck, I guess.
She liked him.
But that he just sucks the life out of cars, too. It's just,
so is this going to make money? I mean, is this going to make a
kids,
lot of money?
You know,
I
people got to take their kids to stuff. But
it's in 3D. You already mentioned that.
Yeah.
So it's going to make... You know, it has that 3D bounce, so it's going to gross 20 extra
think,
percent.
Was the first Cars that monstrous a hit? It was a hit.
I think
hit.
It was big. I don't know
it was
where in the grand scheme of things it works out.
I think there's a list in here.
Yeah, I don't know if that talks about their grosses, but there was a list. There was a recap of Pixar movies in there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But Cars 2 is the big one for this weekend. What about, let's see, Green Lantern? How was that? I have not seen that.
Green Lantern is just okay.
Yeah, it seems like everyone seems pretty disappointed in
it.
I
think some of the critics got a little out of control about it. I think some of the critical responses were a little overboard.
But isn't the problem when you're doing, it's an origin story and you're doing these... Aren't all of these comic book origin stories kind of the same on some level? I mean, aren't
yes,
they all
they're somewhat
formulaic?
Similar.
And
I would say the problem with this one is that they tried to do too much of the universe of Green Lantern.
Yeah.
And I'm a nerd, and I know all of this stuff, so which is well established, obviously.
Okay.
We were talking about fucking Capital Cities purchasing ABC in 1987, and we were talking about Dennis Connor in the America's Cup race.
Yes.
And I don't even fucking care about that stuff.
Okay.
But, okay. The deal with the Green Lantern is it's a intergalactic police force,
mm-hmm.
and there's like 3,600 Green Lanterns.
Okay, yeah.
Then they want to show you all of them on the screen.
So this movie generally doesn't take place on Earth either.
Well, there's big chunks of it that are in space.
Yeah.
And it was too... I think they tried to do too much with the first one.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't... Yeah, I'm sitting there, and I know all this stuff, and I'm going, eh...
I think the more relatable the characters are, the more human they are. People generally like those more, like Spider-Man and Batman.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the more human, sort of relatable people.
When you got a guy who spends 10 minutes talking to a fish man with a laser weapon on his hand, it does, you know what I mean?
Sure.
It loses a little scope. In the comic book, you'll sit there and go, okay, I'll accept that this guy is from a planet of vegetables, and so he looks like a tree. And he's got a Green Lantern ring, too. You know what I mean? It's more. I think it's easier to absorb because you're just familiar with the concept. This, they put it all into one thing.
Yeah.
And it's too much. The tone's weird. Peter Sarsgaard is trying to act, but his character's underwritten.
Wow, yeah.
It's
And this movie, I know Ryan...
But I didn't think it was... Look, there's worse comic book movies.
Sure.
The goddamn Catwoman.
Daredevil.
There's Elektra. just terrible.
Okay.
This isn't that bad, but it's a little overambitious.
Well, and also in our Ryan Reynolds, you have him sitting there on the cover of Entertainment Weekly staring at me right now, but I don't know if he's that big a star.
I
wonder if the movie needed a bigger star. I wonder if it would have done better.
I don't know who they needed.
I mean, Thor didn't really have a big star either. I mean, Natalie Portman, but it did okay.
But you know what the problem with Thor is? No one's talking about it like 3 weeks later.
Right, but I mean, that's what's going to happen with this. This movie's going to make 5 cents from here on out. If you didn't see it week one, you're not going to this.
Iron Man was talked about the whole summer.
Right.
That was a big hit.
Iron Man 2 was disappointing, I think, for some people.
But
yeah.
The first Iron Man was a big
hit. Yeah, Iron
Man
was a big hit.
Remember, it was a big hit, and people talked about it all summer.
Sure, yeah.
And it played all summer.
It did.
This is going to go...
And Thor didn't, and X-Men didn't, although I saw X-Men. We can talk about that next if you
want. I'll tell you what. I think they've overdid it with the comic book.
I agree, yeah.
Marvel has three.
Yeah, that's too much.
DC, that's their one.
Right.
But... there's four comic book movies. I think it's too much.
In too short a time, yeah.
They're coming out one after the other.
Mm-hmm.
I think you're good for about two a year.
Yeah.
And they're overdoing it.
Yeah.
And when in X-Men. Go ahead. Well, let me hear what you thought about it.
X-Men First Class, which we went to the drive-in, me and the girlfriend, the other night. Mm-hmm. And we got to say, we both really liked X-Men First Class. In fact, I thought it... of the X-Men movies, I had only seen the original Bryan Singer one.
Sure.
But it was better than that, I thought.
The second one's really good.
Is it really X2?
X2's worth seeing.
Okay. Yeah. Well, this was, I thought, better than the original X-Men movie. Mm-hmm. And I thought it was just kind of a good movie.
Yeah.
Like, the X-Men are in it, but it's not... there is stuff that's overly comic booky, mm-hmm. and probably, you know, for people who know the comics and the origin of it. But...
Here's what I'll tell you about that movie. I had to look a couple things up.
Oh, really?
That's impressive. When I got to go, what's that?
Oh, yeah.
There was like,
I didn't have to look anything up.
Well, no, I mean, the guy who threw tornadoes around.
Yes.
I had to go look up who that was.
He was new to you.
Yeah, didn't know who
I think there was stuff like that, but you know what? Even if you don't know who that is, it doesn't matter.
And the guy with the devil tail. No, you didn't. No, I'm just saying.
And this movie, it also works because if you've never seen X-Men, this is the perfect movie to watch because
you
introduce everybody. And it's like, you know, like my girlfriend said to me at one time, she goes, and it's a minor spoiler, but this is just because I just didn't know. She goes, well, you know, he has to, you know, and James McAvoy is Professor Xavier or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And she goes, well, you know, in this fight, he has to get crippled. And I was like, oh, you're right. He's in a wheelchair.
He didn't actually have to.
But you know what I mean? She's like, that's going to happen now. And I didn't even think about it.
Yeah.
I didn't even, that never crossed my mind. And of course it happens. But, you know, and it works so well that way. Where it, you know what this reminded me of a lot? Was the Star Trek reboot that J.J. Abrams did. It reminded me a lot of that movie. It was younger actors. It's characters you knew.
That Star Trek movie was almost a perfect example of how to do this.
Right. I thought this was better than the Star Trek movie.
Yeah.
Just for me. Just the action worked better for me.
Sure.
And the Star Trek movie was good.
But the Star Trek movie was fun the whole way through.
But I thought this was every bit as good as that, if not better.
Wow.
I would recommend
it. I would say this. Although he didn't actually have to be paralyzed.
I thought I knew where
that was going.
Right.
But in the comic, you know what happened when they did these comics? Stan Lee was not thinking ahead.
Uh-huh.
And he just put Professor X in a wheelchair because it was a better visual.
Like there was no origin of
him. And then a couple years later
they did a flashback.
Hey, how did he do that? Yeah, and it wasn't like Magneto, it was some other guy, you know.
Yeah.
He fell down a hole or something. So they didn't
It doesn't matter ultimately to the movie.
But when you make a movie, you have to sort of, that's one of my problems with screenwriting and part of the problem that happens in Green Lantern. Everybody's got to be connected to each other and, there's a screenwriting philosophy where all the stories are interwoven. I did like X-Men First Class. The first half I loved.
Oh, really?
And then
the fight at the end is, those fights are always disappointing. I remember that in X-Men 1 going, that fight at the end sucked. And I was like.
Well, because there's just they try.
They're
to
so
do,
powerful, and
they, this is the problem with Green Lantern. Yeah. Is that at the end of the movie, Green Lantern's fighting this cloud monster that's like this that's like destroying San Francisco, and you're like, if this guy can like do this, what are you worried about him doing anything?
Right.
They didn't in Green Lantern. They didn't build his power up slowly like they were. You know,
right?
Where he's learning how to do it.
Yeah.
He pretty much gets the ring, and in about 10 minutes, he goes, "Well, I can fly to Jupiter." And that's what the problem with the X-Men. Magneto is throwing around submarines, and you're going, I would nuke his ass. I would have just pulled the fucking trigger.
Well, but they did make it where those two guys were pretty powerful and the others weren't.
Right.
And so they had to train all together, and that was a good sequence. And, I mean, this is the kind of, like, I'm almost like, I would say this is the comic movie if you don't like comic book movies.
Right.
This is probably a good
but
one
he's
to
like,
watch.
He's, like, moving satellite dishes mm-hmm. with his magnetic powers. There wasn't a... If you're going to do an origin story, there should be a build-up sort of thing.
Yeah, there was a little bit. Come on. There was, yeah, they go back to the Nazis.
I loved him hunting Nazis. That was
Magneto's,
great. Yeah, I'm spoiling this whole
Kevin
movie.
Bacon was great. And I didn't even know he was in it. Never saw him in the trailer.
Kevin Bacon
was
a pretty good bad guy.
And Kevin Bacon was good.
January Jones, God bless her, can't act at all.
She's terrible, but...
Just
terrible. Whatever. You know, what are you going to do?
But McAvoy and Fassbender were great.
Yeah, they were good.
And that's a smart thing. And I think the same thing with the Star Trek movie. They got... good actors and just you if you get
it reminded me of that a lot and so I liked it a lot.
I was with you though, there was too much. I didn't need Beast being all blue and stuff. I didn't need all that, you know. It's like they try to cram as much shit in these movies to get
sometimes you have to serve multiple masters when you do comic book movies. You have to serve the comic book fan, but here's the thing, the movie that ultimately, and I liked it, but the movie that was said, fuck everybody, this is for the comic book fans, was Watchmen, and it was a dud. And you know what?
Yeah.
And Watchmen was a great movie. I love Watchmen. But you know what?
It bombed.
It bombed because it wasn't something that was made for people to just sit down and watch
it
and enjoy.
Entirely.
It was too
faithful.
Deep, and it was too faithful, and too much.
But I said that years ago. They've been trying to make a Watchmen movie.
Yeah.
Watchmen came out in 86,
mm-hmm.
and they've been trying to make a movie since then.
Yeah.
There was a script by Sam Hamm, who wrote the first Batman movie,
mm-hmm.
that everybody thought, Terry Gilliam was attached to it for years. And that's a comic book about other comic books.
Yeah, it's...
it's, you know what I mean? It's not meant to be...
Watchmen was good. They did a great job with it, and it's enjoyable if
sure.
you know what you're getting into.
It's like that ESPN book, though.
It kind
Could
of
you
is, yeah.
make that ESPN book into something other than a book?
Right, yeah.
No. It's too dense with information.
Yeah.
It's too wonky about its specific subject.
Yeah. Too many lead characters.
Yeah,
I mean,
absolutely.
That's a lot of it.
Yeah.
So this X-Men did a good job because it's the two main guys and everyone else is there,
mm-hmm.
but they're not as important. They all get a couple minutes.
It's really funny. These movies are playing against my own interest as a geek.
Yeah.
I actually want them to be less geeky and more filmic.
And this one works for that. And I think that's what people liked about The Dark Knight and Batman Begins,
mm-hmm.
too, is that they really were, you know, especially Dark Knight was more of a crime movie
with capes,
starring Batman, but it was more about crime and the mob and stuff.
Sort of,
corruption. Also, we also had to, my girlfriend's number one movie to see was Pirates of the Caribbean, so we found the double feature with X-Men and Pirates of the Caribbean. She fell asleep for the last half hour.
Oh, good.
I mean, granted, we did see two long movies, so the first movie started at like 9:45, because they have to wait for it to get dark, so... You know, that ended about midnight.
At 2 in the morning.
Yeah, so then at midnight, they fire up Pirates of the Caribbean, which 45, 50, maybe even 60% of the movie takes place at night. And it's so dark at the drive-in, it's hard to even make out what's happening on the screen.
Mm.
And it's just so fucking boring. And so, like... And I had never seen a Pirates of the Caribbean movie.
Oh, really?
But afterwards, my girlfriend said, well, you know, the other ones were very supernatural. And there was lots of cool monsters in it. And all this movie is like a bunch of sword fights.
Mm-hmm.
And I go, yeah, you're right. It was very dull. It was just not like, I don't know how much they spent on making it, but it looks like they almost tried to like do it on the cheap or something. It was like the costumes were good and the ships look cool, but the rest of it was just boring. I mean,
a big fan of that franchise.
Yeah.
I'd had about my fill of it after
first one. No, I agree. I had my fill of it after this fourth one.
After the first one, I'd had my fill.
Right.
And then they made three more.
Yeah.
So I'm not a big fan of that franchise.
But she, as being a big fan, fell asleep, and then she woke up at the end and was all sad that she missed it. And I go, look, you really missed nothing. I explained to her what happened, and I go, look, it wasn't really very good.
Mm-hmm.
Pretend it never happened.
Boy.
So, yeah, but they're saying now that is in the... I think the top 10 of all time now, gross-wise.
The Pirates of the Caribbean?
Because it makes so much overseas, yeah.
Oh. The franchise.
This fourth movie.
Really?
Is gigantic overseas. It's
did
like
the Chinaman just go see it?
I don't know who was he's. I don't know. But
is that what it is? It's just
there,
China
there was
goes
a thing on Deadline about that is now broken in. Maybe it's top 20 all time, but it's broken into one of the all-time top. And part of it was that it was 3D, and it had that extra 3D money. Because it's funny, in the U.S., the top grossing movie of the summer, you know what the top grossing movie of the summer is? In the
Hangover
U.S., it's not Pirates, it's Hangover 2, yeah. And I think Fast Five is 3 or 2, and then Pirates is 2 or 3. So it's funny that in the U.S. it's underperformed, well, and yet it's still this giant fucking
I think
hit.
It's about time we stop looking at grosses as
I know.
Value of a film.
I know, but people are saying, well, this Pirates underperformed compared to the other ones, and it's like, mm-hmm. it's still, even though it underperformed,
these articles,
the other ones were so big.
These articles crack me up. They go like,
oh, Green Lantern bombed and made $50 million.
Right, yeah, right. They're like, Green Lantern's on track to make $55 million this weekend. This is terrible. What?
Well, if it costs $200 million to make, which is what they say about some
of these. But guess what? Here's the here. They made 2 Hulk movies.
Yeah.
Okay? The first one, they went, no one liked it. That was a disappointment. Mm-hmm. And that one almost broke even.
Yeah.
The second Hulk movie made money.
Yeah.
Was a success. But it wasn't a big enough success for them to go, let's do another Hulk movie.
Yeah, they're not doing another
Hulk
movie. Yeah.
So it's like, these things got to make...
Superman Returns.
Right.
Same fucking exact thing. They blew that.
That one, I think,
they should have made... They should be on Superman Returns 6 right now.
They should be cranking those fucking things
out, but that Bryan Singer blew that
movie. Right up, didn't he?
And screwed it up. Well, they're doing it again. Oh, but... the X-Men guys do... The Watchmen guys doing that.
God, Zack Snyder.
Really? You're not a fan of Zack Snyder?
Take the camera away from
him. Okay, all right.
Well, you didn't see...
I didn't see Sucker Punch.
You didn't see Sucker Punch.
I did see The Legend of the Guardians, The Owls of Ga'Hoole, on 3D Blu-ray.
Did that not dissuade
you? No, I didn't enjoy that.
It's
the 3D was good.
It's over fucking stimulation.
Yeah.
Here's what's happened is that there's been an exponential grade curve.
Yeah. But it's going to be crazy, though. I think I agree with what he brings to Superman visually. I'm interested in that, Zack Snyder.
Okay, here's the deal. I think what happened is that Hollywood in the 50s was all about wide scope, spectacle. Mm-hmm. We had to have 10,000 extras and biblical, you know, and it would be these giant crowd scenes and stuff. But if you watch those movies, the action isn't really overwhelming.
No.
It's spectacle and scope.
Spectacle, sure.
And then Lucas and Spielberg came along and redefined mm-hmm. the whole thing and said, we're going to do effects-based pictures mm-hmm. and blow everybody's minds. And Star Wars shot the brains out of every kid in the world. And so it's been this gradual, we got to get bigger and bigger and bigger. And now we're at, I think, a saturation point where these movies do so much.
Transformers is the ultimate example of.
Right. They're just.
It's too big and too much.
Overloaded.
And, yeah.
Okay. Look at this way. Look at Raiders of the Lost Ark. Mm-hmm. Okay. Which is, I consider, one of the greatest action movies
ever. And Pirates, by the way, Pirates 4 rips off the complete plot of Raiders.
But see,
completely, by the way.
Here's the deal, and I was talking about this with another critic. The fight scenes in Raiders of the Lost Ark advance the story, mm-hmm. and they have, you know, every move that happens in it.
Yeah.
Like, take that fight scene.
They're easy to follow.
Right. Yeah. They're laid out and choreographed in a way that you know what's going on. Like, when they're fighting the... when he fights the German air crew.
Yes.
And he beats up the one guy real quickly.
Uh-huh.
And then the big giant
guy. He can't even. He has to figure out a way to kill him.
The big giant guy slapping him around and Marion's stuck in a cockpit. That is brilliantly choreographed every second of it.
Yeah.
And it raises the tension. It offers humor. It advances the character of Indiana Jones because you keep seeing him getting punched and getting back up.
Yeah.
Right? Now these movies are just like blah 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 laser
Transformers.
Blah.
You don't even know what's happening. Like that was we watched that first Transformers in IMAX. And I remember we were going like, you can't even tell. There's so much steel flying around that you don't even know who's who. It's just a thing. You're just watching it. It becomes this like mass of shapes on screen, and it loses. You lose all perspective to the real world, and you don't care.
Yeah, it's stupid. They didn't. Going back to Green Lantern, the Green Lantern's power is his ring. Will make anything he can imagine, and he puts his will into. Mm. So his things are only as strong as his desire to beat you.
No.
Right? So it should be like he throws a fist early on, and he's like shocked that he was able to do it. But by the end of the movie, he's building like, you know, Gatling guns and like he, you know, aircraft. Yeah. He builds an anti-aircraft gun, you know, with his mind. It should have been like, wow, I was able to make something really big, impressively. It doesn't quite build that way. And they've lost the narrative ability in these movies.
Well, that's why Super 8 is a good movie, which we haven't talked about on the show yet.
Have we not?
We both saw Super 8, because it came out, I think, right as we had done the last show.
Okay, good.
Super 8, probably the best movie of the summer as far as I'm concerned. Not that I've seen all that many,
it's
but I really, really like Super 8. And,
damn.
Again, a lot of people say, well, it's a throwback to Goonies and...
Oh, it is.
And you know, Close Encounters. It's not just a throwback. I mean, it certainly pays, you know...
Here's what this movie does. It unzips Steven Spielberg's pants.
Oh, see,
it pulls out the wrinkly old balls.
I disagree.
And puts them in its mouth.
I disagree.
This is the sound of J.J. Abrams while directing Sabrina.
Okay. What did Spielberg really... I mean, okay, Spielberg made E.T. and Close Encounters, but really... He really didn't make a lot of those movies that people think of. I mean, Goonies he produced, but he didn't really direct. So, I mean, I think it's a little overstated.
Okay, but that movie has the basic genetic ingredients of Close Encounters and E.T.
It does.
And it fuses those two.
Sure.
It takes the sense of wonder and terror of Close Encounters and part of the element of E.T.
Yes.
And the kids' storyline.
Yeah.
That's where I'm really feeling the Spielberg influence.
Yeah, okay, I agree with you, but here's the other thing. Here's why it might remind you of those.
And a little bit of Jaws.
This is a really good movie, and it's so the opposite of what we were talking about with Green Lantern and all these other fucking
movies.
No, it is a throwback in that way, but it's in the throwback in the best way. It's also a throwback to storytelling. It's a throwback to acting. Mm-hmm. It's not effects-driven.
Yeah.
The effects that are in this are cool, but they also did a thing, and it's very smart, I think. J.J. Abrams took a lot of shit about how they didn't show the monster in the trailer.
Right.
In fact, you wouldn't even know there's a monster in it. I mean, you suspect something's going on.
They took the same approach as Cloverfield.
Yeah.
Which didn't show the monster
yeah.
really almost in the movie.
But you knew there was a monster. Super 8, you just know something happens in this town and it's weird.
They gave you nothing.
Yeah.
And you know what? I liked that.
I did too. And maybe the movie didn't make as much money as it would have, but I'll tell you, I really enjoyed the Super 8.
In fact, I was almost disappointed when the monster popped out in Super 8.
Well.
Because it was better wondering what the hell was
going on.
It kind
of was. It kind of was. It turned into Jurassic Park a little bit, too. I guess you could say Spielberg had that when the kids were being attacked by this monster and finding clever ways to outsmart it and
but
stuff.
Well, just the setting of 79.
Yeah.
And the look of it.
Yeah.
It was almost the town from E.T.
It reminded you of E.T. or Jaws.
Right,
or
right.
Well, that's what I said. I said, here's the thing about this movie. It's set in 1979, and these kids would have seen Star Wars.
They hadn't seen Star
Wars.
Close
Encounters.
Right,
and
right.
It's weird that these kids are really into zombie movies.
They were
when
into,
in fact,
Frankenstein.
In 79, they would have been into Star Wars and Spielberg.
You know what that kid, did that kid have a... Planet of the Apes poster in his room.
I think he might have, but there
that's
was a lot
like
of
what they would have.
There was a lot of, you know, the George Romero and stuff. And I don't think kids of that age. I mean, I'm those kids in that movie are slightly older than me. Yeah. In other words, they were older
in
79,
like 42.
Yeah, they would be in their early 40s, which I'm not. Mm-hmm. And so I kind of know what kids would be into at that age. And yeah, they were a little bit older than me, but it seems like that was such a big thing in the 70s to be into Star Wars and Spielberg and stuff, and that those kids wouldn't be. And I guess if you did that, then it's just too obvious that the movie probably should have been set in 72 or 73. But
it felt
whatever
like
they wanted to.
It really
make
felt
it.
More like 75 than 79.
Right.
But hey, we're quibbling.
Yeah.
I like the film.
We're splitting hairs.
I have two complaints about the film.
Okay.
Basically, one is that I think it should have been entirely from the kids' perspective.
Okay.
There are
scenes with the father.
When you get into the adult storylines, although I liked Kyle, what's his name? Kyle Chamber? Kyle, the guy from Friday Night Lights.
He was the dad.
The dad.
Yeah,
he was pretty good.
Yeah.
But I think when they started to get into the dad's storylines, it slagged a little bit.
I know what you mean.
The other dad, Ron Ellard, was kind of weird.
Yeah, it was unusual.
But the movie really clicked when it was from the kids' perspective.
Yeah, when the kids are shooting that movie
and
stuff, it's real funny. And
I would have made it entirely, much like E.T., which really didn't get into the adult story very much at all.
Yeah.
The mom was in it a little bit.
The adults were only there to stop the kids from doing what they wanted to do. They sort of became that. And this movie does follow the dad becomes sort of a hero.
It puts a little bit more into. Well, he's almost like the Brody in Jaws.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
He's ended up having to take over responsibility for the whole town.
Yeah.
So it has that vibe.
Yeah.
So it really is a tribute to those movies.
Yeah.
But I liked it.
Yeah.
I did, and then I had a quibble at the end. I'm not going to spoil.
Okay.
So it's a good movie overall, and you know what, of the movies this summer. It's not a original. It's not a product that was out before.
It's not a sequel. It's not a
rehash. It's not a revamp. It's not a marketing cash in. Cars 2 feels like a toy commercial.
Yeah.
It's not that.
Right.
It's not Mr. Popper's Fucking Penguins.
Yes. Oh, God.
Which was...
That was another option at the drive-in, was Mr. Popper's Penguins.
Grade Z
Green Lantern. Yeah, it looks terrible.
Horrid.
Yeah.
So, I liked Super 8 for all those qualities in that it was an original product that was new, separated from everything else, and told a pretty good story. So,
all right.
And if I can make one other movie recommendation before we get out of here. Conan O'Brien Can't Stop.
Ah.
If that is coming to your town, or if you can get it on, you can get it.
It's going to be on demand.
It's going to be on demand in some places.
Yeah, it's on my system. I have AT&T UVerse. They're actually showing it for free tomorrow as we're recording this. So
oh, really?
I'm going to watch it tomorrow probably. I'm going to remember it's on and watch
it's
it.
It's not necessary that you go see it on the big screen.
Right.
But if you can get it on DVD or Netflix or however you acquire it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't generally advocate Netflix because I hate them. But,
no, Netflix is great if you
like
stuff like
that. Yeah, I know,
but
it's killed the whole business in
a
lot of ways.
It's killing cable television, which is both good and bad. But.
It's destroying a lot of industries. Anyway,
all right.
There you go. But Conan O'Brien Can't Stop. It's hilarious. You really, even if you don't like Conan, I think it'll be interesting. Mm. Although, if you like Conan, it's a bonus.
See, my thing, and I haven't seen it yet, is I kind of feel like Conan... That was such a big deal when he went on that tour, and that's what this movie chronicles, is Conan's fired from The Tonight Show, and he goes on this tour. But I kind of feel like a lot of that hype now almost isn't applicable. It's kind of like, what are we so excited about? He's just doing this little cable show. And his show is good, but his show isn't...
It's not making waves.
It's not lighting the world on fire. And then again, nothing is, but it's also like,
well,
you know...
There's a great scene in the movie where they're like working on the schedule, and it's him and the, you know, editors and all this stuff. And they go, well, we got to stop. We got a meeting with TBS. And Conan's like, right, because we're going to meet with TBS. And, you know, there's a totally like.
Well, I mean, he ultimately, and we've talked about this to death, but he kind of really didn't have a choice at a certain point, you know, where it became.
He was kind of boxed out of network
television. And again, and we talk about television. The money isn't there to really make a show, you know.
Mm-hmm. I wonder if HBO would have been a better place for him.
But then nobody gets HBO. Yeah. And talking about being hidden. I mean, I watch the TBS show and I enjoy it. But
like Bill Maher.
Yeah, Bill Maher. You never.
I love Bill Maher, but he's hidden away from.
If Bill Maher got shot in the face on that show, it wouldn't even make the news because it's like.
And if I liked the Bill Maher show, maybe 15% more, it would be almost enough to get HBO.
but you don't.
You know what I mean? It's just not enough.
Let me recommend another documentary. This I saw on Palladia, which is MTV's HD channel, but I believe it's out on DVD and Blu-ray, or it will be soon. Back and Forth, the documentary of the Foo Fighters.
Oh, really?
Terrific. It's so great because it talks about the end. It just starts where, like, Nirvana's ending.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so great, and it just, they interview everybody. Chris Novoselic is in it, and it's the history of Foo Fighters. Cause, you know, he had to, like, fire a bunch of guys from Foo Fighters over the years.
Mm-hmm.
Dave Grohl and guys quit. And it's really a good story.
What's the one blonde douche that's always in Foo Fighters?
Taylor Hawkins is the drummer.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it's...
Foo Fighters is really him and that guy.
Kind of. Yeah, sort of. But the bass player has been with them the whole time since 95. Right. But, you know,
What happened to Chris Novoselic?
Chris Novoselic actually plays on the new Foo Fighters album.
Oh,
it's
really?
In the movie. And that's the end of the movie, is the making of their most recent record. And Bob Mould stops by and does some vocals on
There's
it.
There's some, you know.
It's a really good, if you love rock documentaries, because, like, you know, Foo Fighters isn't a bad, like, you know, Taylor Hawkins OD'd on drugs at one point, and, you know, Kurt Cobain dies at the beginning, and then, like, he has to fire people, and everyone that he fires or quits is in the movie as well,
mm-hmm.
so that you get both sides of the story, and it's real, like, you just, you get, like, ooh, you just, it's kind of creepy.
Can I be honest,
like,
Foo Fighters is a band I've never cared for one second about.
Well, that's fine, but it's a great movie. What I'm saying is I like Foo Fighters, even though I don't really have a lot of their records.
They're likable, but I've never cared.
But you know what? I mean, like, every song that's featured in the movie you would know just from knowing rock radio or MTV or whatever. It's all stuff you know, so it's like it's real good.
Yeah, no, and they're a big band and a successful band. I'm just personally not my thing.
Yeah, well, but Back and Forth is real good. But you like Nirvana, and it's
the
story.
It is
really the story of Dave Grohl after Nirvana. But all these other guys, you know, Pat Smear is in it from Nirvana.
I'll tell you what a great documentary can do? You know what's a terrific documentary about a band I could give a toss about?
What's that?
Some Kind of Monster, the Metallica documentary.
Okay, yeah, I've never seen that.
That's terrific.
That's the one where they go into
like
therapy.
Therapy.
Yeah, I have that on my Netflix queue, and I've never watched
it. That's a terrific documentary.
Yeah, I wanted to see that, yeah.
And I think what really works about the Conan movie is that it's a great backstage documentary. It's a great, and having worked in comedy a little bit, you and I have seen some of this with bigger acts we've worked with. There's the pressure of the people that come backstage, the pressure of signing every autograph, and it's heightened through the roof for Conan. Yeah. He goes to Bonnaroo at one point, and and what you find is that Conan is, like a lot of comics that we know, never off. He is always riffing, telling jokes, and he's funny in ways he isn't on the show. Mm-hmm. He's mean. He just snipes at his, like, you know, just makes fun of his junior writers and assistants, and Jack McBrayer from 30 Rock shows up and he goes off on him about being a hillbilly for like 10 minutes. And it's like just a funny. That's a great, and that's what it does, is gives you somebody you're really familiar with in a different way. So if that Foo Fighters documentary can show me a different side of Greatest
Role. Yeah, it's good. Well, it's about rock and roll. It's about, you know, like they talk about, you know, well, we're doing clubs and then we're doing arenas and everyone's having a great time and it's so fun to do these arenas. And they go, then it starts to become, they all look the same. Mm-hmm. So then we start drinking before the show.
Right.
And now it's fun to do these shows again. And then when the drinking's not fun, then we start doing drugs. And now the shows are fun.
Right.
And then you know what I mean? And then it turns out one guy's in the hospital. So it's really a good, it's a classic, you know, it's got everything in it. It's got band members hating each other, drugs, overdose, you know, all that stuff, money, you know.
All the stuff that should be in the ESPN
every
book.
Rock and roll. Well, there's drugs and sex in the ESPN book, but. Anyway, we got to wrap
it
up.
Not as much as the SNL book.
Not as much.
Yeah, well, I got to go, man.
You got to go, and I didn't talk about a lot of stuff on cable TV, The Killing, Game of Thrones, Falling Skies.
We'll get
to that next time on the show, but I want to thank everyone for listening. Don't forget the final Club Bart comedy night.
Say farewell to a friend.
Yeah,
Club
Bart. That's tomorrow night.
You want this toffee
Thursday
thing?
Night, sure. The Corey's like literally leaving. You don't have to leave right now.
No,
it's okay.
I
you
really
can say
do.
Goodbye. All right. Goodbye.
I got to bail, everybody. Good night.
All right, good night.